We are ready to begin tonight, so if everybody could please make their way to a seat. Thank you. Everybody needs to be in a seat, please. The town clerk informs me that we have a quorum, and I hereby call this annual town meeting to order. My name is Kate Blake. It is an honor and privilege to serve as your moderator for this 2023 annual town meeting. A few housekeeping items before we begin. First, for anyone who needs closed captioning, there are reserved seatings in the front of the auditorium to my left in order to see that screen. If you're not able to get to the front of the auditorium, you can also activate the Wi-Fi for the school for an internet connection. And you can use the sudbury.ma.us/townmeeting/captions. Second, everyone must be in a seat. We cannot have anyone standing in the aisles or their seat unless they've been called upon to speak. Fire exits are located at the rear of the auditorium as well as in front through the stage. Bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit doors as well as outside the cafeteria. If anyone needs an extra warrant, please raise your hand and keep it raised so that one of the scouts can deliver it to you. Finally, we have a couple people in the front who need warrants. If the scouts could bring warrants to them, we have warrants in front here. Just keep your hands raised as I continue on with my announcements. And then finally, a quick note about electronic voting this year. Voting at town meeting will be conducted using an electronic voting system purchased by the town of Sudbury as authorized by town meeting in May 2022. You shouldn't have received a wireless remote clicker to cast your vote. When it is time to vote on an article, I will declare that voting is open. To respond, press the button that matches your answer. For yes, you will press 1A. For no, you will press 2B. The clicker will display 1 or 2 and OK. There is no need to press send, as your vote will be automatically submitted. If you want to change your vote or you press the wrong button, simply press the correct button. Only the last vote will count. Once I announce that voting is closed, the system will calculate the vote, and I will then announce it. The results will also be shared on the screen for everyone to see. If you need to leave the auditorium at any time, including the end of the night, you must give your device to a clerk staff outside the auditorium. This includes even a visit to the restroom. You can only vote with your own clicker. If your clicker does not show anything on the screen, please stand up and let me know, and we will swap out your clicker device. Before we get started, we're going to conduct a test vote to make sure everyone's comfortable with the voting procedures. So the vote is, will the Red Sox win the World Series? Voting is open. Does anybody need a moment to finish voting on that test question? Okay, so voting is now closed. And it did not pass, so we'll put that result up on the board so everyone can see.
Oh, no.
Now on to the business at hand. Please allow me to introduce you to the following members of the LS singing group, Accent Day A Cappella, who will lead us in the singing of the national anthem. We have Shawnee Dar, Rebecca Edwards, Lucas Flack, Hogan Fletcher, Harry Gans, Gabe Hegelson, Jackson Hill, Justin Miller, Isabel Molina, Max O'Brien, Bia Pestka, Sylvie Quinn, Yasmari Rosa, Jonah Rotundo, Ainsley Sullivan, Hannah Zachariah. And I now invite you to rise if you are able for the singing of the national anthem.
Where was the minute left? I thought.
Pledge of Allegiance. Alexia is a freshman at Lincoln Sudbury. She plays soccer, participates in Nordic skiing, Student Senate, and the Pediatric Intervention Club. She is a senior Girl Scout and a founding member of the Scouts BSA Troop 65. She is working on her Eagle project and conducting a bake sale tonight to raise funds for Gifts of Hope Unlimited. Gifts of Hope assists victims of domestic violence, and Alexia is working to improve the experience at their supply warehouse.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I see we have some people who have just come in. Again, as a reminder, everybody needs to be in a seat. We have opened the upstairs, with there's plenty of room if anybody wants to move up there. For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrants to residents. I can also report to the hall that the certified free cash, according to Dennis Cohane, finance director, is $4,336,876. Technically, the moderator is required to read each article and all of the related procedural documents to the hall verbatim. As you know, Sudbury has adopted the practice of omitting the reading of the warrant by the moderator with the consent of the hall. And this one we're not actually going to do electronically. Therefore, may I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant? Is there a second? Okay. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Okay, cards down. Anyone opposed? That passes by majority. To assist me with managing this town meeting, I have asked Nell Forgas and Katie McHugh to serve as assistant moderators. May I have a motion approving the appointment of Katie McHugh and Nell Forgas as assistant town moderator for the 2023 annual town meeting? So moved. Is there a second? This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you. Any opposed? That passes by well more than majority. I would like to express my deepest gratitude to the dedicated town officials and staff who have kept our town running and helped with this meeting. I would ask that any staff raise your hands just so we can acknowledge you. Thank you. Thank you to the BSA Sudbury Scout Troops 63 and 65 for your assistance with manning the microphones tonight. They are Annika Alving, Troop 65, and from Troop 63, we have Teddy Shee, Josue Layard, Gabriel Parra, and George Airhorn. I now recognize Select Board Member Russo for a resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during the preceding year.
Good evening. This is the in memoriam resolution for the 2023 annual town meeting, which reads, whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those of the community who gave of their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us, now therefore be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of these persons and recognize their service and dedication to the community. These people are Lillian Balk, Dorothy Burke, Michael Callahan, Todd Eady, Eva Fridman, Curtis Garfield, Diane Heiser, Thomas Holliker, D. Bruce Langmuir, Ann Lavery, Eric Lind, Yvonne McCandless, Neil Minkoff, Muriel Nelson, Robert Place, Francis Publicover, Marguerite Skog, and Dorothy Wright.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Representative Carmen Gentile for a citation and resolution.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Pleasure to be with you all tonight. So, my wife and I had two children that passed through the Sudbury Public Schools and the Lincoln Sudbury High School. And I remember after they went to college, they told us, gee, you know, a lot of our friends tell us that the college they're going to, it's less work than Lincoln Sudbury. So if Lincoln Sudbury is a great high school, it provides our children with a wonderful experience and that stands them in good stead for the rest of their lives. And so the last eight years, I've had the pleasure of working with Superintendent Bella Wong, who will be leaving at the end of the year. And I have a citation from the House for Bella, which I'd like to present to her, to you. Be it hereby known to all that the Massachusetts House of Representatives offers its sincerest congratulations to Bella Wong in recognition of your 10 years of dedicated and remarkable public service to the students of Lincoln and Sudbury as the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional High School Superintendent and Principal. The entire membership extends its very best wishes and expresses the hope for future good fortune and continued success in all your endeavors. Given today, May 1st, at the State House, Ronald Mariano, Speaker, myself. Thank you. And I also have a resolution or resolutions from the General Court commending the Commission on Disability of the Town of Sudbury on its 30th anniversary. Whereas the Commission on Disability of the Town of Sudbury celebrated the 30th anniversary of its establishment on April 7, 2023, and whereas the Commission on Disability consists of over 50 volunteers who, over the last 30 years, have developed, coordinated, and implemented programs designed to benefit, assist, and include individuals who live with disability in all aspects of community life, while raising community awareness for programs such as access to transportation, accessible parking, and educational scholarships. And whereas the Commission on Disability collaborates with other town commissions and boards to educate them on the needs of those living with disability and advocates for an awareness of those needs to be an integral part of the town's future. And whereas the Commission on Disability successfully proposed and supported the Town of Sudbury's undertaking of a comprehensive self-evaluation of its policies, programs, properties, and facilities to ensure compliance with the Federal Americans with Disability Act and the Massachusetts Architectural Access Board's regulations, and has worked on the development and implementation of a transition plan to establish a timeline for all citizens of the Town of Sudbury to have equal opportunity and inclusion in the community. And whereas the Commission on Disability has created opportunities for the community to become more aware of the needs of those living with disability, such as through its collaboration with Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School in the Town of Sudbury to produce a video documenting a day in the life of a disabled student at LS, and its participation at community events and educational forums. Therefore, be it resolved that the members of the Massachusetts General Court hereby commend the Commission on Disability of the Town of Sudbury on its 30th anniversary and thank the Commission for its outstanding achievements and exemplary efforts in these fields of endeavor, and be it further resolved that a copy of these resolutions be forwarded by the Clerk of the House to the Commission on Disability of the Town of Sudbury. Assigned, House of Representatives, adopted April 13, 2023, Ronald Mariano, Speaker, Stephen James, Clerk of the House, Karen Spilka, President of the Senate, Michael Hurley, Clerk of the Senate, and myself. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator, Honorable Select Board and Finance Committee, and the town staff and fellow community members here in the hall and viewing at home. I'm Kay Bell, Chair of the Commission on Disability, and on behalf of the Commission, I thank Senator Eldridge and Representative Gentile for ushering the joint resolution through to the passage by the members of the General Court of Massachusetts. The commendation in this resolution goes to the 47 volunteers and 6 staff who rose to the call over these 3 decades to help make Sudbury more inclusive for people of all abilities. I feel as though I am channeling Irina Petch, the woman who stood like this before town meeting in April of 1993 to help Sudbury formalize its commitment to access and inclusion. Perhaps some of you here tonight were present then. In recent years, there has been a resurgence of that spirit in Sudbury, and the Commission on Disability is still here, ready to continue to support and promote the town's will to make full participation for all a reality. Everybody in, no one left out. Everyone welcome is what Sudbury is about. Thank you.
In order to expedite town meeting and save valuable time for discussion of key issues, Sudbury utilizes a consent calendar to facilitate passage of certain articles that appear to raise no controversy. This year, the warrant lists 26 articles on the consent calendar. However, the Select Board has made the determination to indefinitely postpone Article 8. Accordingly, this year, the consent calendar contains 25 articles. As stated in the warrant, the consent calendar is the first order of business at the beginning of annual town meeting. This means that we are taking those 25 articles out of order. In order to take any article out of order, a 4/5 vote is required. May I please have a motion that the consent calendar, being Articles 10, 11, 12, 13, 16, 18, 19, 22, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 42, 43, 44, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, and 54 be moved as set forth on the in the list on page little Roman little 3 of the warrant booklet for the Monday, May 1, 2023 annual town meeting. Is there a second? Okay. This requires a 4/5 vote to pass. Voting is now open. With your clicker. Yes. To my left, kind of in the back, on the main floor for Sudbury TV. Please stand and state your name and address.
Hi, I'm Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. In previous town meetings, we had gone through the articles in the consent calendar and asked if there were anyone who wished to remove any of those articles. Are we going to do that tonight?
Yes. Right now, the vote is on whether or not we're going to take all of these articles out of turn, and then I will go through article by article to see if anybody wishes to hold it. And if somebody wishes to hold that, that's a majority vote, and then that article will be taken up in the ordinary course chronologically.
Thank you.
Okay. Voting is now closed. And if we could see the results, that has passed by majority, or not, I'm sorry, not majority, 4/5. A majority vote is required to hold an article from the consent calendar. The quantum of vote required to pass the consent calendar will be the strictest quantum of vote required by any individual article on it, which based on these 25 articles is a majority. I will now read through the list of articles on the consent calendar. If you wish to seek a vote to hold an article, please raise your card when I get to it. We will then hold a vote to determine whether that article will be pulled from the consent calendar. There will not be any debate on that. It will just be a vote. If you would like to ask a clarifying question about an article, please raise your card and indicate so that I may address your question. I will now read the list of articles on the consent calendar. Article 10, Chapter 90, Highway Funding. Article 11, FY24 Stabilization Fund. Article 12, FY24 Revolving Fund Spending Limits. Yep, in the back.
Given the large amount of money.
Just restate your name and address, please.
I'm sorry. Elaine Barnard Goldstein of 40 Indian Ridge Road. Given the large amount of money in Article 12, I would like to see that taken out of the consent content. Calendar.
Okay. So we will now take a vote on Article 12, pulling that from the consent calendar. We'll just need a minute for our software, please. Okay. Voting on holding Article 12 from the consent calendar and taking it up in the ordinary course. Voting is now open. Again, it's a majority.
Point of order, Madam Moderator.
Yes.
Can you just confirm which way a yes or no vote?
Sure. Yes. So a yes vote would pull it from the consent calendar, and we would hear it in the ordinary course. A no means that you want it to remain on the consent calendar. Okay, voting is now closed, and that did not pass, so we're going to keep Article 12 on the consent calendar. Moving on, Article 13, Capital Stabilization Fund. Article 16, authorize select board to petition the general court to adopt legislation, an act authorizing the town to establish a fee for a checkout bag charge. I have a request to hold Article 16. You just there's no debate on whether or not we're going to hold that. We'll just need a moment for our software. So just as before, voting is now open whether or not we're going to hold Article 16. A yes means you want it to come off the consent calendar. No means you want it to remain on the consent calendar. We'll keep voting open for about 20 seconds. Voting is now closed on article on holding Article 16. That did not pass. Put the results up. We will keep Article 16 on the consent calendar. Moving on, Article 18, Schools HVAC Repairs and Replacement. A request to hold that? Okay. Voting is now open on holding Article 18. Yes means it's coming off the consent calendar. No means it's staying on the consent calendar. About 20 seconds to vote, please. Okay, voting is now closed. That did not pass. Could just see the results. Article 18 will remain on the consent calendar. Article 19, Curtis Middle School Audiovisual System Replacement. Article 22, Purchase of Storage Building. Article 33, Swap Body Truck. Article 34, swap body truck. Article 35, sports field mower. Article 36, multi-purpose tractor. Article 37, front end loader. Article 42, Community Preservation Act Fund, Accessible Pathways on Town Properties. Article 43, Community Preservation Act Fund, Bruce Freeman Rail Trail CSX Extension. There's a request to hold Article 43. Voting on holding Article 43 is now open. Yes means you want to pull it from the consent calendar. No means you want it to remain on the consent calendar. Voting will commence, will be open for about 20 seconds. Voting is now closed on that request, and it did not pass. Article 43 will remain on the consent calendar. Article 44, Community Preservation Act Fund, Curtis Outdoor Health and Wellness Space. Article 46, Community Preservation Act Fund, Fence and Lights for Fairbanks Multisport Court. Article 47, Community Preservation Act Fund, Historic Research Inventory Surveys, Phase 5. There's a request to hold Article 47. Okay. Voting is now open on whether or not to hold Article 47 from the consent calendar. Yes means you want to pull it. No means you want it to remain on the consent calendar. Voting is now closed on that. That did not pass. Article 47 will remain on the consent calendar. Article 48, Community Preservation Act Fund, Watershed-Based Plan, Restoring Water Quality in Hot Brook. Article 49, Community Preservation Act Fund, Hosmer House Historic Structure, Cultural Landscape, and Collection Study. Article 50, Community Preservation Act Fund, Housing Trust Allocation. Article 51, Community Preservation Act Fund, Indigenous Cultural Landscape Study. There's a request to hold Article 51. Voting is now open on whether to hold Article 51. Yes means pull it. No means keep it on the consent calendar. Voting is now closed. That did not pass. Article 51 will remain on the consent calendar. Article 52, Community Preservation Act Fund, Regional Housing Services Office, membership fee. Article 53, Community Preservation Act Fund, Return of Unspent Funds. Article 54, Community Preservation Fund, General Budget and Appropriations. I will now entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar articles as printed in the warrant, with the exception of Article 8, which is being indefinitely postponed. Thank you. Is there a second? Okay. There is. So this will be a majority vote to approve the consent calendar. Voting is now open. Voting is now closed. That has passed by well more than a majority. Article 1, For many years, it has been our tradition at annual town meeting to honor someone who has performed valuable service to the town by asking them to make a motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor Marilyn McLean, a longtime Sudbury resident. Ms. McLean was on the Revolutionary War Bicentennial Committee in 1976, the Cemetery Study Committee from 1976 to 1977, a member of the Historical Commission from 1982 to 2000 and from 2004 to 2019, a member of the Strategic Planning Committee from 1998 to 2002, an election officer from 1999 to 2000 and 2003 to 2023, and a member of the Sudbury Celebrates 375 Sudbury Day from 2012 to 2013. Ms. McLean, would you please come forward to the podium in front?
I move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2022 annual report or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction or errors, if any, may be found.
Is there a second? There is. As published in the warrant, the Select Board supports this article. Is there any discussion? The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. Voting is now open. Voting is now closed. That passed by well more than majority. Thank you again for your service to Sudbury, Ms. McLean. Before we begin consideration of the substantive articles of the warrant, I'd like to take a moment to review some basic procedural issues. For more detail, please refer to your warrant starting on page Roman numeral 1. Every matter that is voted on at town meeting must come in the form of a motion. The warrant articles themselves are not self-starting, but a motion may be made to move in the words of the article. Unless a presenter moves in the words of the article exactly as it is printed in the warrant, they must explain to the meeting the changes in the motion. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, to the town clerk, and to Mr. Thompson, the technology administrator, in writing before they are made. If you wish to speak, please raise your hand and wait to be recognized. A scout will bring a microphone to your row and it will be passed to you. Only registered voters in Sudbury, non-resident Sudbury employees, or elected state officials may speak without permission of the meeting. Every time you address the meeting, you must begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address. All remarks and questions should be addressed to me, and then, if appropriate, I will recognize town staff or officials to answer your question. According to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes, and all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes, unless additional time is granted by the meeting. I have asked Layla Frank to monitor the timing of those speaking today. Some notes on voting. As I previously mentioned, we'll be using the handheld devices for voting today. I will remind you of the requisite quantum before each vote, and then I will announce that the voting is open, then closed, and then I will announce the results of the vote, which will also be posted. Lastly, a brief word about decorum. A healthy respect for both sides of an argument is essential if we are to achieve our goal of acting in the best interests of our town. I ask that you treat every speaker today with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly you disagree. To that end, I will not allow any clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise at any point during the meeting. It is within my power as moderator to terminate the right to speak of anyone who makes disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. I would ask that everyone keep their remarks brief as possible, as we have many articles to get through. At this time, I now recognize the chair of the Select Board, Charlie Russo, for a State of the Town address. Please note that for this address, as well as the Finance Committee's State of the Budget presentation, there will be no set time limit. Thank you. Mr. Russo?
Thank you and welcome everyone here tonight, and thank you, Madam Moderator, for the opportunity to speak. My name is Charlie Russo, and as outgoing Select Board Chair, I stand before you tonight to continue the tradition of our annual State of the Town Address. Much has changed in the past 12 months since our last annual town meeting. And look, you guys, I'm not talking about the gray hairs or the glasses that I gained in the last year. No, this past year has been a year of transition. Even in the wake of a global pandemic and with a change of our town manager, this town has moved forward. The state of our town remains strong. I've struggled with how to capture all there is to celebrate and how much there is to look forward to in a brief time. I've struggled, but let me just try to highlight some of our recent accomplishments. In the past year, we welcomed a new town manager, Andy Sheehan, and since joining us in February, Andy has already made a positive impact in many of the areas of our town, and I look forward to seeing what the future holds under Andy's leadership. As we welcome Andy, we must also thank Assistant Town Manager Mary Ann Bilodeau, who served as Interim Town Manager for the third time between July and February. Very few people, I think, have any inkling of the real sacrifices Mary Ann has made on behalf of this town, and all of us owe her a debt of gratitude. Sudbury's 2022 Employee of the Year was Beth Porter of the Health Department. And Beth, Andy, and Mary Ann are just a few of the many, many valued staff who put in tireless and often thankless efforts to deliver the services we all enjoy as residents. Were I to name all the wonderful staff, committee volunteers, and organizations in town who help this town run so well, we'd be here all night. So let me just say thank you. This past year has also been a year of groundbreakings. Construction on Sudbury's long-awaited segment of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail began in October and is expected to finish around January of 2025. When complete, the BFRT will stretch for 25 miles uninterrupted from Lovell to Framingham. Also in late 2022, the Eversource transmission line began construction. The town's legal efforts there won a significant victory in forcing the transmission lines to be buried underground and contained within the narrow clearing of the railroad corridor, rather than strung atop 40-foot-tall towers within an 80-foot clearing as Eversource had originally proposed. In addition, an extensive permitting process has put into place numerous conditions to protect the public health and safety of our valuable environmental and historical resources, and the monitoring of these conditions is a significant and ongoing effort, so the work there continues. This project, while controversial, does bring public benefit. Once the transmission line is complete, the State Department of Recreation and Conservation will build a 4.3 mile stretch of the Mass Central Rail Trail across Sudbury. That trail is part of the planned 104-mile Mass Central Rail Trail, which eventually is envisioned to stretch from the Science Museum in Boston to Northampton to our west. That phase is expected to begin in 2024 and finish again in early 2025 in close alignment with the BFRT's opening. The intersection in Sudbury of two of the largest rail trails in Massachusetts, the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail and the Mass Central Rail Trail, will put us in the map in a literal way. These resources will provide residents of all ages and physical capabilities with a significant resource for healthy transportation and recreation, as well as ADA-compliant access to our natural resources. Also of note, this past summer, a groundbreaking for the Fairbank Community Center was held, with an anticipated opening later this year. That project will replace a 1950s-era elementary school, provide modern facilities and significant benefits to our community, specifically to the Senior Center, the Parks and Recs Department, and the school administration, as well as our community as a whole. In addition, we broke ground again on the expansion of Fire Station 2 on Route 20 near Whole Foods, and this will enable us to house an ambulance there, which will bring faster response times to the south side of Sudbury. A special thank you to all the staff involved in those projects and to the Permanent Building Committee, especially for overseeing the Fairbank and the Fire Station projects. Beyond these major infrastructure upgrade projects, there's been a number of actions taken to reflect our community values. These include the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Commission went from an interim commission to a permanent commission. Pride Month was celebrated for the first time in Sudbury and made into an annual celebration. The Select Board has adopted the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism. And the Senior Center was recognized and awarded as a Dementia-Friendly America certificate for its work on that important issue. And thanks to the efforts of the Historic Commission, Sudbury was named a certified local government. This is a prestigious certification which qualifies us for an exclusive pool of grant money and empowers us with greater authority in preserving our valued historic resources. And look, you guys, just look in your hands. This year we've got electronic voting. It's in use for the first time tonight, so please bear with us. But it's a wonderful way of marrying modern technology with a 384-year history of this great community and bringing speed, accuracy, and transparency to this most democratic of traditions. I could keep going. I could cite more examples, but I think you guys get the picture. Big things are happening in Sudbury, and lots of good things are happening in Sudbury, thanks to collaborative, collective action, all to advance the common good of our community. Speaking of, there were major advances towards improving the sustainability of our town, and per Article 58 of Town Meeting of 2022, the Climate Emergency Declaration adopted by Town Meeting, I want to take a quick moment to provide a follow-up report on some of the highlights of our sustainability efforts of the past year. These efforts have been bookended by two significant events, the 2022 Town Forum of last July, which was dedicated to climate change and sustainability, and then this past April 22nd, where Sudbury held what we believe is the first ever Earth Day celebration at the Goodnow Library. That was a great event and one that I hope to see continue and grow in coming years. In between, the town, through its staff and its committees, recorded a number of accomplishments. These include hiring the first ever sustainability coordinator to help advance our current and planned sustainability efforts, the purchase of an electronic E-F-150 truck for the police department, plans to install EV charging stations at the police station and sometime in the future at the Flynn Building and the Goodnow Library as well. We benefited from the expansion of the Community Electricity Aggregation Program, which saved the town thousands of dollars by locking in low electricity rates. There's a climate action plan now under development, which we hope to release soon to guide our future steps toward greenhouse gas emission reductions, resiliency, and sustainability here in Sudbury. And tonight, at this town meeting, you all will consider several town meeting articles, 25, 30, and 31, intended to upgrade the roof of the DPW building, add solar panels there, and use the lessons from this project to expand the solar panels to other locations in town. Special thanks to staff and the Energy and Sustainability Committee for their input and for using revenues from the Sudbury's landfill solar array to fund many of these sustainability initiatives. It's a lot, you guys. It's a lot. And I've barely even mentioned COVID. But the pandemic's another area of transition for us. And this past year, we've seen a move back toward normal. With the COVID-19 public health emergency being set to officially end on May 11th per state and federal guidelines. It was nice to leave the mask at home for me this year. In addition, this past year saw the return of our Memorial Day and our July 4th parades. We celebrated a Fall Fest at Haskell Field in September and a Holiday Village at Town Center in December. And the outpouring participation at these events, I think, showed us all how much we missed these types of in-person events and these community gatherings. And I hope these events, too, will continue and grow in the coming years. Thank you to the organizers of these events. But even as we exit the COVID-19 pandemic, its effects linger. Without the ripple effects of the pandemic, we likely would have submitted to you a completely balanced budget with no need for any override. However, the pandemic-induced learning loss of our students and the heightened focus on emergency response efforts compels us to seek additional resources, forcing two override requests this year. I'm proud. And I'm grateful that our community has already approved both of these at the ballot box at the March election. Later in this meeting, you will hear more about these proposals, and you will vote again on these articles. In starting to wrap up, Sudbury holds a strong financial position. We retain our AAA bond rating, which reduces the cost of debt and signals the strength of our financial controls and the wisdom of our financial decisions. The town has a balanced operating budget, We have strong reserves, and we continue to hone our capital planning process. The transitions we see in the work and construction projects now underway around town will lead to a positive transformation that we can look forward to. They're the result of collaborative teamwork between our town, our staff, volunteer committees, local businesses and organizations, and of course, all the residents. The accomplishments of the past year set a strong foundation for all our futures, and we can look forward to Sudbury becoming an even more welcoming, sustainable, and wonderful place to live in the coming years. Thank you all for your time. Thank you all for being here tonight to help shape the future of our great community. Let's have a great town meeting. Thanks.
Thank you. Article 2, FY24 budget adjustments, motion by Select Board.
The motion for Article 2 is to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? There is. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 2 is majority. I'm sorry? Voting is not open yet. Voting is now open. Voting is now closed. Article 2 passes. Article 3, FY24 override budget. A few notes on procedure. We will begin with a so-called limiting motion from the Finance Committee that proposes an appropriation not to exceed the amount required to fund the proposed budget. The limiting motion, if passed, will then establish the upper limit of the budget. A vote in favor of the motion does not mean that town meeting has approved the particular distributions as set forth in the warrant, but rather establishes only the upper limit of the town's budget appropriation for fiscal year 2024. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line by line the items in the main motion. Absent a motion to reconsider the limiting motion, a voter can only make a motion to amend to reduce a line item or to increase one item and decrease another so that the total amount appropriated does not exceed the amount established by the limiting motion. In other words, it would be out of order to make a motion to increase a line item alone if that increase would cause the main budget figure to exceed the amount set by the limiting motion, without first moving for reconsideration of the limiting motion. I will now recognize the co-chairs of the Finance Committee, Michael Joachim and Eric Pope, for the budget limiting motion.
The Finance Committee moves that the amount appropriated under the fiscal year 2024 budget not exceed the sum of $115,512,355.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. I will now ask the Finance Committee co-chairs to give the state of the town's financial condition.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Mike Joachim, and I am the co-chair of the Finance Committee along with Eric Polk, and we will share the duty of presenting to you on behalf of the Finance Committee this evening. Try this again. So as you know, the Finance Committee is a group of residents appointed by the town moderator with the goal of making recommendations to you on the town budget and finance-related warrant articles. To do this, we do extensive analysis. We look at a lot of background material, talk at length with town officials and town committees, ask a lot of questions, debate amongst ourselves, and do a very thorough review of these different articles. And then we present to you, as we're doing tonight. And we do this with a fiduciary duty to put aside any personal interest and to act in what we believe is the best interest of the town. So an overview on our presentation tonight, we'll talk a little bit about the operating budget, which is Article 3, the one before us now. While we're here, we'll also talk about the capital articles before you and then the CPC articles as well. So to begin with Article 3, the Finance Committee recommends approval of the Article 3 override budget. A little bit of background on the budget in terms of revenue and expenses. The total revenue that the town will receive next year, if this is all approved, the article's approved, is either $115,495,000 under the non-override situation or $116,240,000 with an override. And I'll speak to the override in just a second. The money, the revenue, comes from four different sources, which you can see on the slide. The point of showing you the numbers is just to convey that the vast majority of our revenue comes from property taxes. That's how, essentially, we fund our town. We do get money from the state in the form of state aid. We have other local receipts like auto excise taxes. There's an other category beyond that, like ambulance fees. But the majority of our money comes from our property taxes. For those of you who are paying really close attention, you'll see that the numbers on this slide aren't quite the same as the numbers in Article 3, and that's because about $750,000 of this money goes to Article 4, which is our town manager's capital budget. But again, the vast majority goes to the operating budget. Now, a word on the override, which pertains to the property taxes that, again, are the majority of our revenue. Proposition 2.5 places a limit on the amount of money that we can collect each year in property taxes. The amount we collect is the levy, the limit is the limit, so it's called the levy limit. That levy limit goes up 2.5% each year, hence the name Proposition 2.5. It goes up 2.5% each year, plus we're also allowed to tax new construction, new homes, new buildings, so that we can obtain the revenue from those as well. To increase that limit, we need an override, and that's what we're talking about tonight. Our non-override budget is the one that relies upon revenue from property taxes that stays within the existing levy limit. The override budget extends that levy limit. It increases it by about $750,000, $745,460, $750,000. It extends that limit a bit more so that we can tax more and raise that much more money. And we would take that money. The goal is to put $750,000 more into the SPS budget. So that's what we're talking about with this override. You'll note that Charlie mentioned there are two overrides before us today. Another form of an override is a one-year rise in the levy limit to pay for capital. It's called the capital exclusion, and that's what we're talking about with the fire engine later on tonight. So that's the revenue side of our budget. Whoops. Sorry, I went too far. Here we go. In terms of expenses, we have three cost centers in town. We have the Sudbury Public Schools, the town, and Lincoln Sudbury. And you can see the numbers up on the screen. The basic idea behind this slide is just to convey 46% of our revenue, that $115 or $116 million, 46% goes to SPS, 29% is used for the town, and 25% goes to our portion of Lincoln Sudbury. Lincoln obviously also contributes to Lincoln Sudbury. So we actually contribute 71% of our overall revenue to education, which is interesting in and of itself. So the Finance Committee's overall observations on the operating budget, having extensively discussed the budget, we believe that all of the cost centers have convincingly explained their needs and their planned uses of their budget funds. If you look at the end of your warrant, you'll see the Finance Committee report. I'm sure you've all read it in depth, and you'll know that we have talked about each of the cost centers and the strong budgeting that they have demonstrated. I have a few items up on the slide that I won't read, but overall, all of the cost centers have shown strong budgeting and strong demonstration of their needs. Three concerns that we mention in the report that I'll mention now. One is that all of the cost centers have talked about their needs, the pressures on their budgets. Whether it's with the town, there are a number of positions that have not been funded over the years, for example, a police officer and a fire inspector. There's also pressures on the schools in terms of inflation and the cost of out-of-district education. All of them have conveyed to us pressures that are going to have to be dealt with in the future, while keeping in mind the pressures on taxpayers. We don't have an answer for that now, but it's something that we're keeping mindful of, and it's where we're going to have to be looking at that over the course of the next years. Two other notes concern debt. One is that the state reviewed our budget a few years ago and came back and suggested that we pay for more of our debt with levy dollars, with tax and other dollars, as opposed to having Proposition 2.5 overrides, or what are called debt exclusions. We're doing that, but that's going to put pressure on the levy. If we take money from the levy to pay for debt, it means we don't have that money for other things. And that's just going to be a pressure on us in the years to come. Again, something that we're aware of and keeping an eye on. Also, we've approved debt in the past, in particular Fairbank, and the consequence of that will start to hit taxpayers soon. We will start to see that in the results of the debt exclusion that we passed. And that, again, will place pressure on taxpayers. So we're very mindful of the pressures on the cost centers and the pressures on taxpayers and the pressures within the budgets themselves. Again, they're just things that we are keeping an eye on as we move forward. In terms of this year, again, the Finance Committee recommends, we voted 5-2 to recommend the override budget. And again, the basic idea was what I said in an earlier slide. We believe that the cost centers have convincingly explained their needs and their planned uses of funds. With regard to the override in particular, as I mentioned, that increase in the levy limit, we would put that in place in order to ensure that we could put an extra $746,000 into the SPS budget. We voted for that for a number of reasons, and you can see them on the slide. I'll just say them briefly. For one, we all recognize that funding our schools is one of the most important things that we do as a municipality. At the same time, we recognize that increases in taxes do place a significant burden on many members of the community. We thought a lot about that. Both of those issues came up in our meetings. We talked about them. We weighed both of those factors heavily in making our decision. In talking to SPS, it was clear to us the critical need for student supports as we emerge from the pandemic. We also saw the other pressures on the school budget that I mentioned earlier, coming from inflation, from out-of-district costs. If the override does not pass, SPS has talked about the cuts that it would have to make, and we believe those proposed cuts would place a very high burden on students and families. We have also looked at the idea, well, is there other money that could be used to cover these expenses this year? We talked a lot about that, and we believe that while that may be possible, it would only push the issue further a year, which is to say there's a structural deficit. The SPS budget cannot accommodate the additional expenses over the long term. If we were to find alternative sources this year, it just postpones until next year the same discussion we're having right now. And we did have a minority on the committee who did want to use other funds to address the fiscal year 24 needs and assess further next year. They'd prefer to wait until next year. But again, we voted 5-2 in favor of the override budget. Now, we are required to present to you a non-override budget as well. And so you'll see that in the warrants. We voted 5-2 in favor of the non-override budget that you see in the warrant, which is to say we are not suggesting moving any money between cost centers to accommodate the needs of one cost center and take money away from another. So the non-override budget that we are specifically recommending to you is the one that's in the warrants. And again, we did that because we thought all of the cost centers presented a strong case for the money that they need. We have said that if the non-override budget is the one that you choose, we do recommend that SPS look to other sources of funding and try to avoid those cuts with the understanding it is not a long-term solution. We will be back next year, but we will be back next year, and we will talk further about it at that point. Wrong direction, sorry. Oops. Okay, and then one more slide on the operating budget. We put this in our Finance Committee report as well, but we like to show the impact of the different elements on the in the warrant. So the items in red on the slide are the ones related to the operating budget. We base this slide on the average residential property in Sudbury, which is one that was assessed at about $950,000 in current fiscal year. If you pass the non-override budget, the tax on that house goes up by $381. With the override budget, there's an additional $114 of taxes for that house. So that shows you the actual impact of passing one of these two budgets. And we'll get to the other parts of this slide later in this deck. With that, we move to the capital articles. And Eric, are you going to still take those? You're going to take it from up there. Okay.
You can go to the next slide, Mark. Article 4, the capital budget, town manager's capital is $728,525,000, which, as Mike stated, is within the levy. Financial section 17 in the warrant for that, and the FinCom voted 6-1 to approve that. There's a 30% decrease in the FY23 versus the FY23 capital budget. Most of this is accomplished by allowing for levy funds through stabilization to be utilized specifically in Articles 11 and 13, which we'll get to later on tonight. After reviewing each article and debating, similar to all the other articles, we had hearings with each of the proponents of the articles, as well as reviewed and discussed the CIAC report on capital warrant articles. Article 23, which is the exclusion for the fire engine of $1,020,000, is effectively a one-year override. It's funded through free cash. And we'll display, if it was funded through free cash, rather, which is the reason the decision was made to make it a capital exclusion, it would have displaced the funding for a number of other important warrant articles, and we concurred that it was a better use of funding source to go with the capital exclusion route. The main reason for this exclusion is, which I'm sure the chief will speak to later on, there's a significant supply chain delay potential, which would, overlap delivery of the new engine with useful life of the outgoing engine, So it's a prudent thing to get the order in place and get the engine set up, and there's quite a lead time, which Chief Whalen will speak to. And it also demonstrates the importance of the Capital Stabilization Fund, which was established several years ago. And once that Capital Stabilization Fund is fully funded and able to be dispersed, we'll no longer need to consider, we hopefully will no longer need to consider large capital exclusion items like this on a one-off basis. The impact of the budget approval for FY26 tax bills under the override budget, estimated taxes for residential for the average residential assessed home of $956,957 as of FY23 will be $732, or 4.85% increase year over year. And the breakdown for that is listed. Under the FY24 non-override budget, estimated tax increases for the average residential home would have been $463, or 3.07%. Again, the FinCom approved all the capital articles by either a unanimous vote or a majority pass, one no vote. If you go to slide 18, Mark. Observations on the capital process from the FinCom. Again, number of positive things. We've been working to improve the capital improvement planning process over the last couple of years and have made significant progress there. We still have some improvements that need to continue, though, including specific guidance on how to use the Capital Stabilization Fund once it's become fully funded and able to be used. Revising deadlines in the capital timing, in the timing of the capital budgeting process, such that the CIAC, FinCom, and Select Board can reach agreement sooner in the process as opposed to the final weeks approaching town meeting. Ensuring communication of a 5- and 10-year capital plan that align with financial policies, as well as ensuring that the capital improvement plan increases its project monitoring, scope, and price creep and changes where needed. As we move into CPC articles are funded separately through the Community Preservation Act. It's funded through a surcharge of 3% beyond the levy, which it has matching state funding as well on a sliding scale. In each of the last, each year, at least 10% of the CPA funds are set aside for specific categories, which include open space, recreation, community housing, and historic preservation. And the CPC can also designate up to 5% for administrative funding. CPC is projected to collect an estimated $2.9 million in FY24 from the CPA surcharge, which will also receive a state match. Of that, $114,500 is requested for administration. After paying off the current debt service of $990,000, for past purchases such as Cutting, Dickerson, Dixon, Libby, Knobscott, Pantry Book, and Johnson Farm, that will leave about $1.8 million for new projects for the FY24 revenue. In addition, Sudbury is projected to have CPC fund cash balance of approximately $8.7 million as of the end of this fiscal year. Again, all of the votes from the FinCom were either unanimous or one or two no votes. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now recognize representatives of each of the cost centers to explain their positions on the budget. Town Manager Andrew Sheehan will speak for the town. Superintendent Brad Crozier will speak for Sudbury Public Schools, and Superintendent Bella Wong for Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. As you know, Article 2, Section 11 of the bylaws provide that the initial presentation of the proponents of an article may not exceed 10 minutes in length unless consent is given by a majority of the town meeting. In the past, town meeting has recognized the inherent difficulties of having three cost centers present within 10 minutes and has authorized each administrator to speak for 5 minutes for a total presentation of 15 minutes. I would entertain such a motion now if someone wishes to make it. Thank you. Is there a second? There is. This requires a majority to pass, and we'll do that with our cards tonight. So all in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Any opposed? That passes by well more than majority. Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So in terms of the operating budget for fiscal year 24, the next couple of slides, or this slide, is going to be reminiscent of slides that you've seen in the past. We are again happy to have the Government Finance Officers Association Distinguished Budget Award for fiscal year 22. We would be applying for that again for the fiscal 23 budget. The reason for that and what the award is given for is to acknowledge excellence in budget preparation, clarity and transparency in the budgeting process. So I'll go quickly through some of the slides. Mr. Joachim addressed some of these earlier. What you see in front of you is the expenditure side of things for the budget. We focused on the override budget, which is the fiscal 24 requested column on the slide in front of you, for a total amount of $115,512,355. Superintendent Crozier will talk about the SPS budget in a few minutes, and Superintendent Wong will talk about the LS budget in a few minutes. I'll talk about the town budget in the next few minutes. I'm trying to maintain my time here. As Mr. Joachim mentioned, there are really four primary sources of revenue for our budget, the lion's share being the property tax levy. Secondly, the state aid that we receive from the Commonwealth as part of its annual budgeting process, what we refer to as local receipts, which are things such as motor vehicle excise, meals excise, room tax, things like that, and then other available, which the largest portion of that is the ambulance receipts. So the town side budget includes cost of living adjustments for employees of 2%. That covers 6 out of the 7 collective bargaining units that we have in town. We are settled with 6 out of the 7. There's only one that is unsettled at the moment. And then the non-union employees also are scheduled for a 2% cost of living adjustment in fiscal year 24. I'll talk in a few minutes about headcount, but headcount is going up this year for the first time in a while by 3 full-time equivalents. We've got a web developer in the Information Services Department, a land manager in the Conservation Department, and the Sustainability Coordinator that Chair Russo spoke about earlier and that the town meeting approved funding for last year. We are, as Mr. Joachim mentioned, we are up against it in a lot of respects. There are a number of outstanding needs that have not been addressed in a number of years, and most of those remain unsatisfied as we go into fiscal year 24. We will be trying to address them in future years. So essentially, with the exception of the 3 positions, we are looking at a level services budget for fiscal year 24. I'll skip over public schools and leave that to Superintendent Crozier as well as the LS. In terms of vocational education, our budget is dropping a little bit this year in the amount of $50,000. We're a little lower in terms of enrollment of students from Sudbury going to vocational ed. We'll be at 9 students next year. This budget line item covers both tuition and transportation for those students. I mentioned the new positions in information services. We're adding a web developer systems analyst. This is the first new position in the information services department since about 2000. A lot has changed in terms of technology since 2000. And it is remarkable to me as a new manager here that we could be operating now at the same staffing level essentially the same staffing level that we came out of Y2K with. Y2K seems like a lifetime ago, and I think it is well deserved that we move forward with this position. Likewise, on the conservation department, in the conservation department, proposing to add a land manager. We've got 1,200 acres or more of conservation land, another 600 plus acres of private land that we hold conservation restrictions on. All of that needs to be managed and monitored. And about a third of the town is wetlands. And much of the work that the Conservation Commission does is regulatory under the Wetlands Protection Act. All of the easy land, all of the dry land, the upland, the easy upland has been developed. So the challenges of regulating under the Wetlands Protection Act become harder and harder as the land becomes more and more challenging. And then in terms of public safety, we're proposing a level services budget, no new initiatives, no new headcount there. The sustainability coordinator, again, this was approved last year under Article 58. There was an earmark through the legislature that helped us for a portion of this year, actually helped us for the majority of this year. We had trouble finding the right person for the position. That person has been in place for a few weeks now, and we're looking forward to what they're able to do in this year and in years going forward. And then in the longer term, we'll be figuring out how to work this position into the operating budget so that we're not reliant on grants and other one-time sources of revenue.
Your 5 minutes is up. Are you almost done?
Almost done.
Thank you.
Human services is level. Culture and rec is level. Reserve fund, which is the finance committee's purview, is level funded. Townwide operating and transfers is level. Debt service, Mr. Joachim mentioned, is going to be going up as a result of the Fairbank project coming on, the fire station number 2 coming on, and the townwide drainage project debt increasing. So that the debt for those three items will be hitting our budget in the coming years. I will skip over employee benefits and OPEB trust. And again, the headcount is up 3 from 181 to 184. And I will just mention again that there are a number of unrealized requests or unfilled requests that we have on the town side as we look ahead to fiscal year 25. And we will endeavor to address those as we go forward. Madam Moderator, thank you for the additional time.
Thank you. Mr. Crozier?
Brad Crozier, SPS Superintendent. Thank you, Madam Moderator. As Select Board Chair Russo already touched on, talking about the override, I would also like to thank the community for supporting the override at the polls on March 27th. With close to a 2-to-1 margin for approval of the override, it reflects Sudbury's continued commitment to the education and the needs of our students. The funding will allow the district to prioritize academic skills and the behavioral and mental health needs that have emerged post-pandemic while maintaining class size and our current transportation model. The school committee voted in December to approve a FY24 school operating budget request of $44,126,163 to educate 2,483 students. This budget includes the approved $745,460 in the override request and represents a 5.44 increase over the FY23 appropriation. This FY24 budget supports the district goals and the community's commitment to high quality education for the children of Sudbury. For town meeting purposes, I want to focus on the presentation of the budget. However, my prior presentations to other committees and community groups included a deeper dive in the vision and goals of the schools. The FY24 school budget was developed by the school administration using a zero-based budgeting methodology and reflects a careful and thoughtful balancing of the district's priorities, the students' needs, while respecting the fiscal realities. The administration worked with their building staff to identify spending priorities, and in some cases, we reallocated those funds to higher priorities. An example of this strategy is this year, we have reduced the number of teacher assistant positions to fund a school support specialist to help with academic recovery of students. The base budget is a level service budget and it accounts for contractual obligations, specialized transportation increases, and utility increases. The Tier 1 budget are priority items, and this is what drove the district to ask for the operational override this year. It includes two positions to support behavioral and mental health needs of students. Our assessments and survey data have showed an increase of students experiencing anxiety, dysregulation, and suicide ideation. In addition, using academic data, we have identified key academic concerns, and two positions were added to the budget to help build those skills. Finally, with the funding from the override, we will be able to keep class sizes at a reasonable level, address rising costs, and continue with our current model of bus transportation. There it goes. This slide shows the per pupil cost compared to other districts that the school committee identified as peer comparisons. Sudbury is represented on this slide in orange and is the fourth lowest in spending compared to our peer districts. One of the significant budget drivers for schools is always enrollment. We constantly track our registrations, use several models for determining student enrollment projections, including using a third-party company. For the FY23-24 school year, we were projecting 2,483 students, which is 36 more students than this current school year. Most districts saw a significant decrease in enrollment during and post-pandemic. SPS saw a small decrease in enrollment in 2020, but it has held relatively steady in the past 3 years. The state data here is included just as a reference for you. In summary, the school department asks for approval of its recommended operating budget, as we believe it is a reasonable and appropriate request in order to fund the Sudbury schools in its effort to provide an excellent education to all students and families. We believe this budget will support the needs that have emerged from students post-pandemic in this coming school year. I thank the administration, parents, staff, and students for their thoughtfulness and hard work again this year. Thank you to the Sudbury taxpayers and community for your ongoing support of the education of the children of Sudbury. And I leave you with this picture. It is from the first parent-funded DC field trip that occurred last year. The eighth grade class traveled to Washington, D.C. to learn about our government and civics, and this year's class leaves first thing tomorrow morning. So thank you.
Thank you. Again, there's no clapping. We're going to move on to Ms. Wong, please. Thank you.
Hello, Bella Wong, Lincoln Sudbury, and Madam Moderator.
Thank you. So the vision for all our students is embodied in our Portrait of an Alice graduate. Our budget supports the strategic objectives to realize that vision for all our students. And over the years, all our programs and initiatives have been supported by all of you. And so I extend my appreciation to all of you. Our enrollment projection, we have been in a gradual decline in enrollment, and so over time we've been using natural attrition, meaning if staff retire or they depart the district, we haven't been fully rehiring them. And so this has helped manage our costs and also to manage our staff reductions in a way that has been most productive for us and least painful. We are very pleased to meet budget guidance this year. We were offered 3.3% for our budget increase from the town of Sudbury, and so we are meeting that budget guidance. And the program impact is that it means that we'll be able to sustain all our improvements that we put in place this year, most notably the expansion of the study of Mandarin and also increase in computer science classes. We're also going to be able to support increased enrollment of global scholars in the next year. We're projecting 150 students, which represents more than 10% of our student body, and we're excited to be implementing a new advisory program this fall. All students starting in the fall will be meeting with a single faculty member 30 minutes a week in groups of 12 or smaller, supported by a curriculum that will support belonging, inclusion, and connectedness, and increase their social-emotional capacity to be able to adapt a broad social context. And so this initiative has been 3 years in the planning, and we're really excited to have its launch. The financial assumptions, they're pretty much similar from year to year, but what I want to highlight is that the OPEB liability, our OPEB trust valuation is $3.342 million as of now, and by the end of next fiscal year, it'll be close to $4 million. So tremendous growth since over the past 10 years, with your support. The other important aspects are the increase of the OOD out-of-district tuition by 14%, and what we've done to accommodate that. As you can see, this is our tuition line over the past few years and the significant jump between the current year and next year, and that represents the 14% increase in tuition. It turns out that for our population, which is unusual coincidence, is that we have a number of students that will be aging out next year, and their tuition in the aggregate comes to about $1 million. So that allows us to go into reserve, the circuit breaker line, by an additional $1 million, and that is how we're compensating for this increase in the 14% of the tuition cost. You'll see that in the end of, for this year, we had a decrease in our tuition and transportation costs, and next year it's still being held to 1.2%, but for the 14% increase in tuition, we probably could have realized a savings in that tuition line, but at least we were able to meet it to sustain the budget guidance. This is to show you that while we've been decreasing staffing over natural attrition, our median class size has been holding steady. So that strategy has been working for us over the years. And this is our overall budget summary, again, meeting a 3.3% increase on the budget. And the assessment. So we are grateful to the towns of Lincoln and Sudbury that support our budget. Right now, the apportionment is 87.44% for Sudbury and 12.56% for Lincoln. It actually has shifted toward Lincoln in this year as it did the past year. This is a chart to outline the relative assessment. So if you go to the bottom line, Lincoln's assessment for next year and Sudbury's assessment for next year, they're marked with TBD because the state budget won't be approved till July. But these numbers are conservative. It's likely to be a little less. We're anticipating when the budget is finally approved. These are the capital items that you'll see more detail in Article 4 and Article 21. And representing our timeline, again, working with both communities, Lincoln and Sudbury, and we have a debt of gratitude to all the finance committees and boards of selectmen and our own school committee for the time committed to the approval of the budget process. And a heartfelt thank you. It's been my privilege.
Thank you. Does the Select Board wish to be heard on the limiting motion?
No.
Does anybody wish to be heard on the limiting motion? Okay. So it is a majority vote required for the limiting motion. Voting is now open. Yes. Sure. So a yes vote is yes. You are voting in favor of the limiting motion, which is establishing the upper limit of the budget. A no vote means that you're not in favor of that upper limit. The limiting motion's up on the screen as well. Voting is now closed. The limiting motion passes by well more than majority. Now, having established the upper limit of the budget, I will now ask the Finance Committee co-chairs to make a motion regarding the proposed expenditures.
Do you have the wording?
It should be on your screen, the main motion.
This is the limiting. Oh, the main motion. The Finance Committee moves that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the column FY24 override for fiscal year 2024 as printed in the warrant. Said sums to be raised by taxation, except that the following items to be raised and designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers. To transfer from ambulance reserve for appropriation account to item 200, public safety $660,000. To transfer from solar revolving account to item 400, public works $68,525. To authorize the town manager to transfer within the fiscal year 24 budget $1,453,049 from item 900, employee benefits, town and SPS, and $650,000 from item 1,000, OPEB trust contribution, town and SPS, to the OPEB trust established to meet expenses for post-employment health and life insurance benefits for eligible retirees, and to expend such funds for that purpose, and to authorize multi-year contracts in excess of 3 years, either by renewal, extension, or purchase options, in accordance with the provisions of Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 30B, Section 12, upon determination by the Chief Procurement Officer to be the most advantageous option.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. Does the Finance Committee wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3?
We stand by our presentation earlier.
Thank you. Does the Select Board wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3? I will now read each line of the proposed budget and ask if anyone has a motion to amend. Remember, because town meeting has enacted the limiting motion, any motion to increase a line item must include a provision to decrease another line item in the same amount, unless a voter first makes a motion to reconsider the limiting motion. 300, Education, Sudbury Public Schools. 300, Education, Ellis Regional High School. 300, Education, Vocational. 100, General Government. 200, Public Safety. 400, Public Works. 500, Human Services. 600, Culture and Recreation. 800, Reserve Fund. 800, Townwide Operating and Transfers. 700, Town Debt Service. 900, Employee Benefits, Town and SPS. 1,000, OPED Trust Contribution, Town and SPS. 1,000, Does anyone wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3? Okay, it does not look like anybody wishes to be heard, so we will begin voting in one moment. Okay, voting on Article 3 FY24 budget is now open. I should add that the quantum of vote required for passage is a majority vote. Voting is now closed. That passes by well more than majority. Yes?
If we don't see an okay, does that mean our vote is not resolution?
Want a microphone? I don't know how to answer that question.
Yeah, you should see it okay. You pressed it and it didn't see okay.
Right.
You should.
Give us 1 second.
George?
Swap out the,
we could either swap it out or we can give you. Is that the first time you didn't see it?
No, it was the first time it mattered.
Okay. Sorry, yeah.
So is George in the back of the room? We could swap out a clicker. Thank you. I'm sorry, where did that come from? Yep, so can you pass the microphone over, please?
For other people with that problem, where they're not seeing okay, should we also stand up?
Yes, if anybody has not seen the okay, let me know. Okay, so Ms. Green, we're going to need a couple more clickers, and then we'll redo that vote. So just a point of clarification, if you hit your button before I announce that the vote is open, it's not going to say okay. And if you press it after I say the vote is closed, it's not going to say okay. But if we could just have a show of hands who needed to swap out a clicker. So we have two in the middle here. Anybody up? And one up top, too. And then we have one up in the balcony, too. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I just want to make sure everybody now has a handheld voting device. Oh, we still... Somebody coming up to the balcony. Chief Nix, to the rescue. And we'll do a test vote before we go back to Article 3. Okay, so this is a test vote. Voting is now open. Everyone should press yes or no.
Do we know how many clickers are there? What? How many clickers are being used? Well, probably around 4.
Okay. Okay. And if you're seeing an okay, then your vote has been cast. And now I'm going to close the vote. So we'll see that on the screen. Anybody still having an issue? Okay, looks like Ms. Bell is having an issue. Anybody up in the balcony? Okay, looks like the balcony is fine. Okay, there was a gentleman in the middle here. Okay, a few more are coming. So I want to make sure also that people are pressing the buttons that say 1A and 2B and not yes and no. Yes and no are not an option. Yes or no are just indicating whether it should be 1A or 2B. And then the OK is showing up in small print underneath your vote.
The number will either show a 1 or a 2.
So it will show a 1 or a 2.
And then it will say OK.
And it will say OK.
And then after the vote is closed, it will clear the screen.
Yes, after the vote's closed, your screen will be blank because it resets until the next vote.
All right, so if we could have a little quiet and we'll try it one more time.
Okay, everybody needs to be quiet. Let's see who needs a clicker. Okay.
In the back there.
In the back, looks like there's a couple. I don't know.
Your click is not going to show anything now because it's not open.
So you're looking at your device. It should be a blank screen. Yeah, do another test one. Yeah. Okay, we're going to do another test. So voting is now open. Make sure you're pressing 1A or 2B, that you see the number and you see it says OK underneath. It says it to the left.
On their clicker. I think it says OK to the left.
Yeah, to the left.
Okay.
Okay.
Has everybody cast a vote and sees a result on their clicker? Okay. So I'm going to close the results or close the test. and now your screen will be blank. Okay, so let's revisit Article 3. Voting on Article 3 is now open. Voting on Article 3 is now closed. That passed by well more than majority. Article 4, FY24 Capital Budget. Motion by Select Board.
Move to appropriate the sum of $728,525 for the purchase of acquisition of capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, construction, engineering, design, and renovation to buildings, including equipping of vehicles and all incidental and related expenses for projects, with the sum of $728,525 to be raised by taxation, and to authorize the town manager to allocate funds as needed between the underlying departments as shown in the following chart. In the FY24 operating capital budget for the Sudbury Public Schools, $200,000. For the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, $78,025. For information systems, $168,500. For fire, $35,000. For public works, $150,000. And for combined facilities, $100,000, for a total of $728,525.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Andrew Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Again, Andy.
Yes. Hold on. Can you get a microphone from the Boy Scouts, please? Yeah.
Mara Houston, Peckham Road. You actually misread the number for information systems in case the verbal record really matters.
Madam Moderator, can I clarify the line for information systems?
Yes, please.
To clarify, in case there's any question, the line item for information systems is $165,500.
Thank you. Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So the Town Manager's capital operating budget for fiscal year 24, as read, includes the three cost centers, Town, Sudbury Public Schools, and Lincoln Sudbury Regional Schools. This covers items that are $100,000 or less in 1 year, or $200,000 or less in multiple years. Items over $100,000 are submitted as warrant articles, and those will be taken up under Articles 18 through 37 this evening. The total budget, Town Manager's capital budget, as the Chair read, is $728,525. The total of that plus Articles 18 through 37, which we'll talk about later on this evening, is $4,486,652. All of the items in Article 4 are funded in the funded in the tax levy. In terms of funding sources that we have available, if we need them, as I mentioned, everything that we'll talk about tonight under Article 4 is funded through the tax levy. Other funding for capital projects, whether under the articles to come this evening, most of them will be in free cash, but there are a number of other funding sources that we have available to us that we use from time to time. One-time revenues such as grants and gifts, overlay surplus, stabilization fund, capital stabilization or capital exclusions, which we'll talk about under Article 23, and debt. But again, this evening, everything in Article 4 is funded through the levy. So just briefly to go through the items on the town manager's capital budget, $50,000 for walkway and design, construction, design and construction. This is a recurring request that we have every year for the expansion of the sidewalk network. A pickup truck for the Public Works Department to replace a 2015 Chevy Silverado for the drainage division. Design for the snow management building renovation. I should add that we also have a congressional earmark request in for this one. We won't know for several months, or we don't expect to know for several months, whether that will come to fruition. But that would be the design of this building as well as the construction, or at least that's the request to the to Congress at this point. In the amount of $35,000, we have a request for the fire department to replace the rough terrain vehicle. For information services, $90,000 to replace the phone system and the routers. Also for informational services, replacement of two copiers, one at Park and Rec and one at the Flynn Building on the main floor. $50,000 to continue our process of scanning documents. This is the fourth year of this project. Replacement of a 14-passenger van for Lincoln Sudbury in the amount of $54,853. This is augmented by some outside funds as well. As well at LS for some exterior stairwell improvements. And then at SPS, the next couple of items, replacement of carpets in various locations, replacement of flooring, vinyl flooring, and bathroom partitions, gymnasium padding, and painting. Happy to answer any questions if there are any from the audience.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-0 with one abstention.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 4? I don't see anyone. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 4 is majority. Voting is now open. Voting is now closed. Article 4 passes by well more than majority. Mr. Thompson, can you just switch the screen, please? If you could show the votes. Thank you. Yes, can we get a microphone to Ms. Bell, please?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. This is Kay Bell, 348 Old Lancaster Road. Could you please give us a little warning before you close the vote?
Sure.
That was kind of quick and some of us didn't get a chance.
Sure. Just so everybody knows, I see the total numbers as they're populating, and I have a general idea of how many people are in the room, so when we get close, I will just give you a 5-second warning. Article 5, FY24 Transfer Station Enterprise Fund Budget, motion by Select Board.
Move to appropriate the sum of $310,648 for the Transfer Station Enterprise Fund for FY24 and to further authorize the use of an additional $17,551 for indirect costs. Such sums to be raised from $328,199 in FY24 receipts of the enterprise as set forth in the article.
Is there a second? So moved. Presentation by Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So The next three articles, 5, 6, and 7, all deal with enterprise fund budgets. We have three enterprise fund budgets, they all operate in essentially the same way. What is printed in the warrant book is what is what will be moved tonight before you. So an enterprise fund budget is essentially a business unit and is funded by the revenues that are taken in for that particular business unit. So in the case of the transfer station, funded by the receipts from the transfer station stickers that are sold, that revenue then supports the entire operation. The goal of these enterprise funds is that they be self-sustaining. If at some point they become not self-sustaining, or we have a year in which we don't collect the revenue that we project and that we need in order to cover all the costs, then the general fund would cover the difference. So, again, as read by the chair, the transfer station is as printed in the book.
Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 5? I don't see anybody. So we will open Article 5 voting now. Okay, 5 seconds. Voting is closed now on Article 5. That passes by well more than majority. Article 6, FY24 Pool Enterprise Fund Budget. Motion by Select Board.
Move to appropriate the sum of $482,280 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for FY24 and further to authorize the use of an additional $45,000 for indirect costs. Said sums to be raised from $527,280 in the FY24 receipts of the enterprise as set forth in the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Same story as the last article. I won't repeat it. If there are any questions on the pool enterprise budget, I'm happy to answer those.
Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 6? Okay, in the back, please bring a microphone up there.
Dan Martin, 86 Brookdale Road. Just a question. The numbers for fiscal year 24 compared to 23 seem pretty similar and a reasonable increase. I was just curious why it was so much lower in fiscal year 22. What happened that it has jumped up so much in that back then?
Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. It is the lingering effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and the effects that had on the operation.
Anybody else on Article 6? Okay, we will. Right there, please.
Elaine Barnhart, 40 Indian Ridge Road. Question. Is there going to be a time when the pool is going to be closed during the transfer from the old building to the new building?
Mr. Sheehan, can you answer that question? Let him confer with his staff.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. In November, it will be closed for a brief period during the transfer November 1st through 6th.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we will open the vote on Article 6. This requires a majority for passage. Okay, a couple more seconds. Okay. Voting is closed on Article 6, which passes by well more than majority. Article 7, FY24, Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund Budget, motion by the Select Board.
Move to appropriate the sum of $213,514 for the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 24, and further to authorize use of an additional $28,000 for indirect costs. Said sums to be raised from $241,514 and the FY24 receipts of the enterprise as set forth in the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. Again, this enterprise operates as a separate business unit like the other two. Happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 7? I don't see anybody, so we will open the vote on Article 7. The quantum of vote on this is a majority. Couple more seconds on that. Okay. Voting is closed on Article 7, and that passes by well more than a majority. Article 8, FY24 Snow and Ice Transfer, motion by Select Board.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? There is. The quantum of vote required for passage of this is... Where was that? Yes, can somebody bring a microphone to the back?
Greg Hamill, 16 Pine Street. Article 2 and Article 8 have been indefinitely postponed. Can we ask why before we vote on this?
I don't want to go back to Article 2, but we can certainly talk about Article 8. Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. We took no action on this, or we're recommending to indefinitely postpone this because we feel that we can close the snow and ice deficit once we are sure that all of the bills are in for snow and ice for the year. It seems, although a little bit ridiculous, that we would... be talking about additional bills coming in, but sometimes there is a lag in receiving those bills. So we would prefer to pull this tonight. We will close that deficit with transfers within the budget, or if necessary, with a reserve fund transfer from the Finance Committee.
Thank you. So we will move on to voting, and again, it is a majority vote to pass this. Voting on Article 3, indefinite postponement, is now open. I'm sorry, Article 8. A couple more seconds on Article 8. Voting is now closed on Article 8. That passes by well more than majority. Article 9, unpaid bills. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article, with $14,932 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Is Mr. Okay. Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So under the statutes, any time that Bills come in at, let me back up a little bit. Our fiscal year runs until June 30th each year. We have until, we give the departments until July 15th or thereabouts to submit bills. Any that we know are outstanding, we encumber those funds and then we can pay them after July 15th. If anything comes in after that that is not encumbered, we have to come to you and ask for a vote in order to pay those bills. This year we have two bills that came in after the close of the fiscal year that we did not encumber. One was for legal services in the amount of $9,742. The other for vocational education transportation in the amount of $5,190. So this is just to keep our vendors whole and honor our commitments. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee does recommend approval by a vote of 7-0.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 9? I don't see anybody. The quantum of vote required for passage of this article is 4/5. Voting is now open on Article 9. Couple more seconds on voting. Voting is now closed on Article 9. That passes by well more than 4/5. Article 14, funding of Go Sudbury Taxi and Uber Transportation Programs for FY24. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $150,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Select Board Member Cardi.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Dan Cardi, member of the Sudbury Select Board, and I also happen to be chair of the Sudbury Transportation Committee. It's my honor to present to you Article Number 14, funding for the Go Sudbury Taxi and Uber Program. Just let's start with a little bit of history here. So for those of you who aren't familiar with what the Go Sudbury program is, it really started with a few things. One of those was our livable Sudbury assessment from a few years back. Okay, the Sudbury's Transportation Committee was created by the Select Board to address a key feature of livable communities, namely transportation. A livable community is defined as one that is safe, secure, has affordable and appropriate housing and transportation options, and offers supportive community features and services. Well-designed livable communities promote health and sustain economic growth, and they make for happier, healthier residents of all ages. So in this study here of interest, transportation was mentioned about 150 times in that assessment. It was one of the main gaps that Sudbury was shown to have through the assessment. Now, the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, or the MAPC, refers to our area as what's called a transit desert. Now, while the term may be new to folks, the concept probably is not. And I think the map here tells the picture. Sudbury is the one in the red with the red box around it. And while we do have an age-restricted dial-a-ride service, we're in between MBTA commuter rails. We have no fixed route service, no MBTA service. And not shown on here, we're sandwiched in between 95 and 495, as well as Route 2 and Mass Turnpike. So the short explanation there is that what makes us a transit desert is it's very difficult to get around within or outside of Sudbury unless you own a vehicle. Okay, the next historical bit of information is the creation of what's called the Making the Connection. So on that map, if you looked at our bordering communities, in particular Acton, Bolton, Concord, Maynard, Stowe, and Sudbury, with bordering or nearby, that actually cuts across three RTAs, or Regional Transit Authority, as well as the MBTA. So there's really no way to expect our RTA, which is the MWRTA, to help somebody get a ride to Concord or to Lincoln because they're covered by a completely different entity. So this Making the Connections Collaborative was formed in 2019 between those five towns as well as Sudbury acting in the lead. And we got $80,000 of community compact grant money to start as really some seed money for a program that would offer transportation to our older community members, those with disabilities, low incomes, or military veterans. So the collaborative was, or the plan was to start in 2020. We got delayed a little bit because of COVID. We got started in 2021, and we actually ran through that entire program in 2022. Third bit of historical information that's helpful for folks to be aware of is the Sudbury Master Plan. So our planning board and our Master Plan Steering Committee, I think, did a great job putting this master plan together. And nobody here in this room, I suspect, would like to see a plan sit on a shelf and gather dust. So the way that this was formed is that the master plan had 154 action items spread across 10 major categories with short, medium, and long-term deliverables. Now, transportation and connectivity was one of those 10. And within that, there were six in action items that we think are directly tied to what we're doing with Go Sudbury. But the story continues within that master plan, and there's actually four more categories that you see on the board here that Go Sudbury touches, eight more action items within those four categories. So all told, if you were to go and look at the master plan and count how many times transportation is mentioned, it's actually 109. So we believe, again, that many of the what we're doing with Go Sudbury helps touch upon many of those different action items. So to talk about where the program is now, Uber and taxi program that we have in place is augmenting the MWRTA-funded community Sudbury Connection Van. Now, to qualify for these programs, you have to be a Sudbury resident employed in Sudbury or a family of a student at SPS or LS and have at least one of the following qualifiers. You have to be over the age of 60. You have to show financial vulnerability. You have to have a disability that limits driving or be an active or former reserve member of the military. So with the program that we have in place right now offers free taxi rides for medical purposes as well as Uber rides with a copay that helps address both, you know, really medical, going to work, shopping, and social. Both of those, taxi and Uber, works within a 25-mile radius of Sudbury, and as long as the ride starts or ends here in Sudbury, then it qualifies. So to give you a rough idea, we were here last year, too, and I'll get to that in a minute, but looking at the most recent 12 months, so today's May 1st, I don't have all the April data locked down yet, but looking at a 12-month period from April of 2022 to March of 2023, we've actually provided 2,386 Uber rides to 71 different riders, 931 taxi rides to 83 unique riders. The interesting thing here is there's only 20 people that have taken rides in both of those. So if you're looking at the number of unique users, it's actually more than half of this room right now. So if I were to divide this line upper and lower and say, you know, we've had that many people take advantage of this program within the last 12 months. Just as another point of reference, Uber rides cost about $19 each, and taxi rides are much more expensive at $77 a piece. So as I mentioned before, we're back. Okay, I think everybody on this stage will acknowledge that we don't tend to like to use one-time funds like free cash to pay for recurring expenses. But the truth of the matter is we just didn't get this operational program worked into the budget this year. So we'd like to try to maintain service until we can make it financially sustainable and within the budget. Historically funding, we did come to town meeting last year and ask for $100,000, but historically we've also had quite a few grants and mitigation funds from things like the Meadowwalk development that have had to help pay for this. 2023, we also took advantage of a MassDev grant. It came a little bit later than we expected it to, but we got a sizable grant from MassDev for medical taxi rides. Now, hot off the presses, we just learned this within the last couple of days, thanks to Representative Gentile, there is a $125,000 earmark with the state that has passed through the House. It still has to get through the Senate and go through a few more hurdles, but we may actually get money from the state, which may mean we don't need as much of this money as we are asking for right now. So we on the SLAC board will have to figure out, you know, if we get that state earmark, if we're lucky enough to get it, perhaps we'll be giving some money back from this particular allocation. Okay. So what's changed since last year? Transportation is one of the six high-level select board goals that were voted this year. The Transportation Committee has provided the select board with a five-year plan, taking a regional look at transportation with many of those towns that I just mentioned. And we've also made changes to the program as the year has gone on. We keep a pretty close eye with what's going on. We've changed the ride caps, the number of rides that are available for people. We've bumped up the age eligibility from 50 years to 60 years. We've made taxis so that it's for medical rides only. And then Uber, we've bumped up the copay on that a little bit so that now 30% of the Uber program is actually copay funded by the riders. But probably the most interesting thing, the most impactful thing, is that we've really got a seat at the table now. We've got the state organizations from both the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, as well as their Central Transportation Planning staff to sit with us, as well as the MWRTA. And I'll tell you that these things don't just happen. We don't just raise our hand and say, hey, MWRTA, look at us. We'd like to offer some service. These partnerships, as we like to say, only happen through assertive persistence in working with these groups. But we've got them at the table now to talk about what's next, and that what next is how can we transfer this and make it much more like public transportation. Okay. So last year we came and we said one of the things that these rides have bought us is an awful lot of data. Okay. We showed some homemade maps last year. This is what they look like when the professionals do it. So what you'll see in here in this particular map, this is about 18 months worth of Uber data. And you can see a lot of common starting and ending points that the origins like our affordable housing clusters in town and destinations like Metro West Medical, UMass Med, Mass General, as well as places of shopping and employment. And then if we look at the same idea from what we've gathered from the taxis, it's a very similar story that happens there. So by using the technical resources at the state level, the professionals are looking now as to what would this look like as far as if we were to get some type of, again, public transportation, fixed route service, or maybe even some type of on-demand service as well. Okay. So we don't want to know just where people are coming from and going to. We want to know when they're going. So this is one of the other things that the professionals are looking at right now is time of day, day of week, in combined with where people are going, okay, which will lead to things like what you see here, what's coming next. So what's coming next is a pilot we're working on right now, a pilot with the MWRTA and what they call their Catch Connect service. So Catch Connect is their version of an on-demand service, much like Uber. Okay. Currently, the MWRTA operates this in Wellesley, Framingham, Natick, and Hudson. We're trying to work with them to create a pilot that's going to run within Sudbury and Wayland. So much more to come on that. We're just in the very early discussion stages on this. But this now is a grant-funded thing. But the funding that we've been able to get at town meeting and hopefully again tonight allows us to keep the conversations going with the MWRTA as well as the state entities that I talked about earlier. So we are being noticed. The first thing you see here is from the MAPC report that came out late last year. Generally, when people think about transportation, you think about, you know, what's going on in MBTA areas as well as Boston. So within 351 towns in Massachusetts, three were mentioned in this report. Two weren't surprising. One was Somerville, one was Medford, and the third one was us here in Sudbury. Okay? And in here you see the quote up here that talks about what we've been able to accomplish with this taxi grant program that we've been running with the taxis. Just recently, we were recognized by the governor's office. And in the circled red box here, it says, your work to finalize a regional transportation initiative is commendable and will provide key long and short-term benefits to the town of Sudbury. And then last and certainly not least, again, is Representative Gentile, who's been a great supporter of what we're trying to do here with these programs. And you'll see in that red box, it says, as a member of the Massachusetts Legislature's Joint Committee on Elder Affairs, the Sudbury Council on Aging, and the State Representative of Sudbury, I'm familiar with the significant transportation challenges faced by many residents. I'm also aware of the town of Sudbury's strong commitment to addressing these issues. Okay, so to bring it back to the people who are
your
utilizing
present,
this service.
Time is, do you have, are you almost done?
Yeah,
thank you.
30 more seconds.
Yep.
So just in closing, I want to bring it back to the people who take the service. We do a lot of surveys here to get feedback. The heart-shaped thing is from our taxi riders, and the car shape is from the Ubers. We perform multiple surveys and got their input along the way, and while some of the comments have been negative or constructive, for the most part, they've been very positive, as seen on the opening slide. So with that, approval of Article 14 will sustain this Go Sudbury Taxi and Uber program for longer term, while longer term sustainable plans are made and more grant-funded opportunities are explored. So I want to thank members of the Transportation Committee, the Select Board, as well as a small handful of citizens that have been very active in attending meetings and providing feedback to us, and thank you to Town Meeting for listening. This article is supported by both the Select Board and the Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0. We recognize the value of this program to the community and the pressures on levy funds, and therefore support the use of free cash to continue it. However, we do view this as an operating expense and recommend that it be funded within the levy in accordance with town financial policies and not be dependent upon free cash year to year. So we urge the town to continue to pursue this goal.
A report from the Commission on Disability, Ms. Brown. We could bring the microphone over here, please.
Pat Brown, Commission on Disability. The Commission on Disability unanimously supports this.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 14? I don't see anybody. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 14 is majority. Voting is now open. A couple more seconds. Voting is now closed. Article 14 passes by well more than majority. Article 15, Fairbank Community Center, Audiovisual Equipment and Associated Funding, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $150,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Select Board Member Kujachin. For presentation, please.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Great to be here with everybody and to see all of you here this evening. On behalf of the Select Board, it's my pleasure to present to you the audiovisual package for the Fairbank Community Center, which is Article 15. Just some background on this article, and I understand that there are some visually impaired people in the audience, so I am to some extent going to be reading my slides a little bit, so I hope all of you understand, so thank you. The money allocated during the 2022 town meeting provided a limited audiovisual package that met the minimum requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Massachusetts Architectural Access Board. Article 15 this evening seeks funding to provide enhanced audiovisual, AV, and assisted listening systems, ALS technology, in all program areas of all three user groups. With your support this evening of this article, the Fairbank Community Center will be more inclusive with this technology. This next slide goes over a little bit of the budget summary and the history of the funding associated with audiovisual. You can see on this slide that this evening we're seeking $150,000 coming from free cash to support the AV package. So in my presentation this evening for all of you, I'm going to give you the who, the what, the when, the where, and the why of Article 15. Who will Article 15 help? Persons with hearing loss who may attend programs at the Fairbank Community Center. I want to hold on this slide for a couple of seconds and just share a couple thoughts with you here as we go through these couple of bullets. Yes, this article is going to be helping people who are visually impaired, but I want to remind the community, with hearing loss, but I want to remind the community that when we help people with disability, really what we're doing is we're helping everybody. So while this article, to some extent, is focused on people who have hearing loss, we're really going to be helping everybody that attends programs at the community center, because we're all going to hear and be heard better through use of this technology. The second bullet talks about persons who may choose to participate remotely in programs at the Fairbank Community Center. I want to talk a little bit about this bullet because this is one of the more important ones to me. We've learned a lot in recent years with the pandemic about the importance of remote access for people. And this is particularly important because people may choose to be remote because of a disability that they have. They may be homebound. They may not be able to drive. There are a whole host of reasons why people may be homebound, for which remote access to programs at the Fairbank Community Center is really important. You know, recently I had the opportunity, and Member Cardi mentioned the Livable Sudbury report, and I encourage everybody to go online and take a look at that report. But recently I had the opportunity to go through that report again. And in that report it talks a lot about social isolation for our older persons. And that's a real issue in our community and even here in Sudbury. Social isolation occurs when people are relegated to their home for whatever reason. Could be what those things I talked about a little earlier, either a disability or they may have a medical issue that keeps them homebound. In the Livable Sudbury report, it also talks about a sense of belonging and how some of our community members lack a sense of belonging. And if you want to read a little bit about that, you can go on the town's website and just Google the Livable Sudbury report, and you can hear a little bit about that. Your support this evening of this article will allow people who need to be remote. You know, this bullet says may choose to be remote. Some people will choose to be remote, but some people must be remote. And your support of this article this evening will allow people to stay engaged in our community. It will reduce social isolation of some of our residents and increase a sense of belonging because they will be able to participate just like everybody else. The next slide is, what will Article 15 provide? And first bullet is remote participation for programs in more program rooms. ALS and speech reinforcement, which is microphones and ceiling speakers, in additional spaces. Flexibility of use, and it will allow for more inclusion to participate now and in the future. I want to highlight a couple of bullets on this slide, so I'm going to hold here for a second. First point that I want to make is stress the importance of the flexibility of use. And I want to give a couple of examples of really what that means. I've done some talking with some of our residents who are going to be using, actual users of this facility. And they tell me that some of the programs that they're going to be offered are going to be really popular. So when we have remote access, what that's going to allow is in some spaces there may be a limit on the number of people that could be present in the program space. But when we have remote access, it will really allow an expansion of the number of people that will be able to derive the benefit of the programs, because there will be people that will be in person, and if the space is maxed out, people will be able to engage remotely. The other idea is, under what was currently funded last year, my understanding is that there was only one program space that was fully outfitted with the AV and ALS technology. And what that limited is, say, for example, I'm a person with hearing loss, and there's a program going on in program room A, but I'm not really interested in that program, but that's where the technology is. I'm limited in, as a person, I'm limited in the programs that I may be able to access. And the final bullet I want to stress is the last one, which will allow for more inclusion to participate now and in the future. And I want to remind our community that we're building this facility for people who live here today, but we're also building it for people who are going to be here tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that. And I don't know about all of you, but I want to build a facility that everybody or as many people as possible are going to be able to benefit from now and in the future. The next slide is, when should Article 15 technology be installed? So it's most cost-effective and less disruptive to programming to install the enhanced AV and ALS technology now during construction, along with the currently funded AV systems. The Fairbank Community Center is already being constructed with the conduit, but not the wiring required to support this technology. This is needed technology, not a nice-to-have. And waiting to fund, purchase, and install it later will limit rooms available for programming that provide technology for in-person attendance by those with hearing loss. It will also limit remote attendance by those who cannot or prefer not to attend in person. Where will Article 15 technology be installed? All program rooms, activity rooms, and meeting rooms at the Senior Center and Park and Recreation Center that were not already fully outfitted under the funding from last year. Sudbury Public Schools conference rooms, and if fully funded through Article 15, all rooms that will be used by the three community center user groups for publicly attended activity programs or meetings will be provided with ALS. Remote participation capabilities will be provided for all, for in all program rooms. So this is why. Why support Article 15? This technology will allow everyone to hear and be heard in program, activity, and meeting spaces. Remote participation capabilities will allow people to virtually attend programs. It will support the needs of our community as we age in place. And we all know how important that is. We all age into disability, as our former chair of the Commission on Disability, Pat Guffey, used to say. Universal design of the Fairbank Community Center to maximize access for all to participate now and in the future. And I love this last bullet on the slide that says, it's less disruptive and more cost-effective to install the technology now.
You almost done. You're out of time.
You bet.
Thank you.
So what happens if Article 15 does not pass? The Fairbank Community Center will not be as inclusive, and it'll cost more money and be more disruptive if we wait to install the technology at a later date. This next slide shows which committees support Article 15. And finally, thank you so much to all of you for listening, and I hope you'll help us to build a more inclusive Fairbank Community Center. Thank you.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-0 with one abstention.
Okay, my scouts have left for the evening, so if I could get maybe one person over here who would be happy to pass the mic and one person over there who would be happy to pass the mic, I really appreciate that. And I'm going to call on CIAC to give their report.
Susan Asbetti and Chaffee, CIAC. CIAC recommends support of this article. The CIAC recognizes that this article would provide better use of the building and inclusivity, and in also taking care of this at this point, it recognizes cost efficiencies.
Thank you. Commission on Disability for a report.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I'm Kay Bell, Chair of the Commission on Disability. I won't reiterate all the important reasons that Ms. Kachajan gave, but the Commission on Disability voted 3-1 to support passage of Article 15. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on this article? Do you mind passing the microphone to the back, please, and way in the back?
Hello, my name is Jeff Levine. I live at 42 Chanticleer Road. I'm chair of the Council on Aging. Article 15 was originally proposed by the Council on Aging, and the COA unanimously supports the article. And we thank the Select Board for taking up the lead on this article, and we appreciate your support. I can't offer any more than Lisa's already provided for you. This is, for us, it's a no-brainer. The seniors need this, and really the town should provide this technology so that we can fully utilize the senior center portion of the building.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Okay. Layla, front, please. Thank you.
Mara Houston, Chairperson for the Park and Rec Commission. The Park and Rec Commission supports this article. Creating a community center that will support everybody that comes into our community center is very important to us, so we encourage you to support this article.
Other comments on this article? I don't see any. The quantum of passage for Article 15 is a majority. Voting is now open. Oh. Yes, if you'll need to speak into the microphone and state your name and address, please.
My name is Richard Weiner. I live at 106 Orchard Drive. How many people now use the community center?
Are you able to answer that question?
I'm probably not the best person to answer that question, so
Mr. Sheehan, who... Oh.
Are there 10 a day, 100 a day, 2 a day?
We're going to just give us 1 second while we figure out the best person to answer that question.
Deb, can you hit?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Deborah Galloway, Director of the Sudbury Senior Center. I would estimate, and when I look at our statistics, it's about 100 people a day that come into the center and about 1,200 different individuals every year. Pre-pandemic, it was closer to about 1,800 different individuals every year. And I don't know the numbers for the Park and Rec Department.
How many are over 70?
If you know the answer.
Probably the majority. I would say the majority of the folks that come to senior center programs are 70
Thank
plus.
Thank you.
Okay. So voting is open. If everybody wants to take a couple seconds to vote, please. Okay, we'll do a couple more seconds on this one. Voting is closed on Article 15, which passed by well more than majority. Article 17, Medicaid reimbursement and additional Chapter 70 funding, transfer to fund ELA curriculum update. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. SPS for report? Thank you. Mr. Crozier?
All right. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Brad Crozier, Sudbury Superintendent. This article uses funding from free cash to fund a curriculum update in English language arts. Oops. This initiative is a large multi-year effort to modernize how ELA is taught in the Sudbury schools using the most recent science on how children learn to read and write. The update will incorporate insights from research from multiple disciplines, including developmental psychology, educational psychology, cognitive science, and cognitive neuroscience. The last ELA curriculum review was conducted in 2012. Recently, the state has updated the curriculum benchmarks in 2017, and they also enacted a law in 2019 requiring schools to screen for dyslexia and learning disabilities. These things combined have really compelled us to take a hard look at how we teach ELA and make some significant changes to our curriculum and pedagogy. As I said, this is a multi-year initiative that we started in 2020-2021. At that time, we implemented universal phonics for grades kindergarten through third grade. We also instituted benchmarking tools to be able to really measure where students were learning and how they were learning. In FY22, we did a needs assessment and compared our needs assessment to best practices that were that have been approved by the state. And this year, we've really focused on decodable texts and began to do a lot of professional development. For FY24, the article will pay for third-party professional development, classroom materials, and core resources for teachers to use in their classrooms. So with that, I'm available to answer any questions or defer to our assistant superintendent for teaching and learning.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-0. We did want to be clear that this is an article funded from free cash, and despite the language of the title, does not, in our opinion, have a basis in Chapter 70 receipts. Chapter 70 receipts actually do not flow into free cash. And we want to avoid any impression that the SPS budget voted at town meeting would go up or down depending upon whether Chapter 70 receipts are higher or lower than anticipated.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 17? Yes, in the front row, please, to my left.
Yes, Richard Weiner again. Same address. I have two questions. The first question is, you talked about other schools, and I know you compared Sudbury to other systems, but did you compare Sudbury K to 8, other systems K to 12? number one. And number two, are those systems that you're comparing yourself to, are they asking for extra money for this too? Or are they including it in their budget?
Mr. Crozier, are you able to answer those questions?
I think he's referring to the some of the comparable districts under Article 3 that we presented earlier. Different districts have different methodologies on the way that they can be funded. I do know that there are several districts that are seeking free cash for similar initiatives. They're also, unfortunately, Sudbury is not typically eligible for state grants that have been funding this type of curriculum work. So it's a mixed bag. But when you look at our peer districts, many of them are funding them, through free cash asks or other budgetary increases.
You didn't answer my question about K-8 and K-12, though, did you?
Yeah, the peer districts that we compare ourselves to, many of them are K-12. We use the state data that is K-12.
But 9-12 is more expensive than K-8 per person per year, right?
Generally speaking.
Thank you.
Other discussion on this article? I don't see anyone else, so the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 17 is majority. Voting is now open. A couple more seconds. Voting is closed on Article 17. It passes by well more than majority. Article 20, Sudbury Public Schools surveillance cameras. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $310,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by SPS. Sandra Durand, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Sandra Durand, Town of Sudbury Combined Facility Director. It's my pleasure to be here tonight to present Article 20, Interior School Video Cameras. This article is to seek funding in the sum of $310,000 or other sum for the purchase and acquisition and installation of security cameras inside of the five schools that we have here in Sudbury: Curtis Middle School, Haynes Elementary School, Loring Elementary School, Nixon Elementary School, and Noyes Elementary School. The purpose for these is to support student safety. We believe that interior cameras will assist us with our students and staff in emergency situations. It will assist our first responders in helping us deal with anything in a very timely fashion. It minimizes risk. It's a deterrent to vandalism and theft. And the project, this project does not include facial recognition software or licensing. To prepare for security and emergencies, we really look at it in a multi-tiered fashion. This pyramid that you see explains that. Emergency preparedness, we conduct safety drills, we have staff and student training, we have extensive communication plans, we have enhanced radio and phone alert systems. We have many partnerships across the districts, and we have lots of mental health resources and school and district crisis teams. That's a basis. We also, in terms of school security, we have our visitor management system. We have secure dismissals. We've hardened our facilities. We've included access control. We have grade information systems. We have exterior cameras, bus surveillance, reporting mechanisms. But what we lack is the interior security cameras. Having these, all of these components together helps us create a very, very good and responsive emergency response. We also have response protocols, and we have reunification planning. We have gone through a process of consulting with our public safety colleagues, our SBF staff, our SBF school compliance school committee, and we've designed interior cameras within the schools, and we've come up with a cost projection. We have also holding public meetings, as we are here today, and we've met with the Sudbury Educational Association. Having cameras is not new to the town of Sudbury. We have cameras on many of our buildings, some of them on the interior. As you see here, this is a spreadsheet that shows which buildings have cameras and which do not. Again, for those of in our audience who may not be able to read this, I will read this for you. The Flynn Building has both exterior and interior cameras. The Goodnow Library has both exterior and interior cameras. The Police Department, interior and exterior cameras. The Fairbank Community Center has exterior and interior cameras, and the new Fairbank Community Center will also have exterior and interior cameras. Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School has interior exterior cameras. They have also interior cameras. And within SBS, we have exterior cameras. Our fire stations have exterior cameras. And the DPW building has exterior cameras. There's been a lot of questions about where we'd like to install these cameras, and these cameras would be in our common areas. They'd be in our hallways, our entrances, our gyms, and our cafeterias. They will not be in the classrooms. They will not be in the bathrooms. In terms of privacy, we would use them in accordance with our current school committee policy. There's access to the recordings are limited to school administrators and safety personnel. This is allowable under the Family Educational Records and Privacy Act. We would incorporate these additional cameras into our existing protocols. Police will have the ability to monitor the views in the event of an emergency. Again, this project does not include facial recognition software or licensing. Interior cameras really support student safety, and we really hope that you'll support this article. In this time of day, we see it a lot. We see it a lot on TV. We never think it's going to happen here. That's what everybody always says on the TV. And we want to be able to give our first responders every single tool they have to make our students safe. Thank you for your consideration. If anyone has any questions, let me know.
Thank you. Select Board for report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-1.
CIAC for report.
The CIAC recommends approval of a vote of 6-0. The CIAC recognizes that this is a safety issue and appreciates that the cameras won't be in the classrooms. And it also appreciates the fact that it would be helpful to first responders in case of an emergency.
Okay. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 20? Mr. Surrett?
Hank Surrett, 58 Longfellow Road. Speaking on my own behalf and not on behalf of the Finance Committee, I was the dissenting vote. Sudbury Public Schools and LS are asking this town for $560,000 to install and upgrade surveillance cameras to spy on students, faculty, and staff in all of the town schools. Spy systems like this are morally offensive. Once upon a time, we taught our students that it was important to be able to warn against oppressors. Do you remember Paul Revere? The English are coming? Well, while we're becoming the English. These are the kinds of systems used by totalitarian governments to subjugate minorities and destroy dissent. They're the ones used by China to oppress Uyghurs. We should be teaching our students to resist, fear, oppose, rebel against, and defeat Big Brother. Students should not be forced to bow down to Big Brother just to be able to attend school. Now, this is the same article that was presented by this group a couple of years ago and was resoundingly defeated because of its intrusion into privacy. It should be resoundingly defeated again this year. Now, after the last debate and the defeat, I found that the system existed at LS, so I did a Freedom of Information Act request. And what I found, in conjunction with other hearings, is nobody actually watches these in real time, and there's nobody budgeted to do it. The systems are used to record and then to decide who to prosecute and who to discipline later. Now, I considered trying to move to amend this article to make it appropriate. An appropriate article would say the systems like this can be turned on if and only if there is an intruder emergency, but under no other circumstances, other than the issuance of a court order or a search warrant. This system has no checks and balances, no way to constrain oppression, and it sends exactly the wrong message to the students. We can't do that by amendment tonight because the amendment would not be within the four corners of the article, nor does town meeting have jurisdiction to order the school committee to restrict its use. What we can do is defeat this tonight and say to the school committees, if you want to come back at a future town meeting and present a system with appropriate safeguards, checks and balances, limitations on use, and the requirement of a court order or search warrant, that's a horse of a different color. This is an open-ended article that would allow for unrestricted use of these cameras. Let's defeat the spy camera articles and send this awful concept back to George Orwell. Now, I will tell you that I've been working with the Electronic Frontier Foundation and writing legislation for Carmen Gentile and others to limit electronic surveillance devices. With the onset of facial recognition software called out by the League of Women Voters and artificial intelligence, we risk total loss of all of our individual dignity and privacy. This is the time to say no.
In the center here, please, Ms. Green. Thank you.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tipley Rock Road. If this is for the benefit of the first responders, could we hear from somebody to represent the first responders about how well it's worked at LS and how well it might work in SPS?
Sure. Chief Nix?
Good evening. Happy Tuesday or Monday or Wednesday or Friday or whatever it is, right? Scott Nix, Chief of Police. Thank you for the opportunity. So one of the things was mentioned is during the tragic circumstances. And I would submit to you, Uvalde in Nashville. Uvalde, I would call it a deplorable response by the police department, and that's, you know, owning my own profession. But that response also allowed us here in Sudbury to improve what our intents would be. Nashville, a great police response, but we always want to try to strive to do better, right? And what I would suggest to you is that a situation like this, whereby if they had cameras to direct the officers more succinctly to the location of where the shooting was transpiring, where the suspect had gone, versus wasting time searching other buildings, other rooms within the building, we would have been far better off. Whether or not we would have saved more lives, I don't know, but I do, you know, commend their responses. I do not call this Big Brother overwatching. That is not my feeling at all. We specifically have the autonomy within the principal's purview so they can produce the video if they so choose. All right. And if you know the laws with all the police reform, police are really not supposed to participate in discipline within the schools. So it's really a non-factor. But another thing would be is what if there was an accusation made against a teacher, whether it was to be proved or disproved, could save a lawsuit. That would be millions of dollars for a short amount of money and going on. But I highly recommend passage of this. Yes, we have tried before. You know, safety is paramount, and I want to always respond as best we can for our students. Thank you.
Chief Whalen, did you wish to be heard on this question? Thank you.
John Wayon, Fire Chief, Town of Sudbury. These devices, whether they're installed in schools or in businesses or in facilities, they provide us with a great deal amount of information, either before or after an event. We hope that we never need to use these devices. But in a hostile event, when the police are going in to take care of that person and subdue them, fire and EMS are coming in right behind them to get the victims out. And if we have the ability to work directly behind them and get those people out, that's what saves lives. It's all about time. Unfortunately, in Colorado, they wasted a lot of time, and we lost a lot of people that way. So these devices are very, very important to these types of responses. Thank you.
On my left, in the middle back, please. Thank you.
Henry Knorr, 55 Goodmans Hill Road. Mr. Surratt would like to characterize this as Big Brother, but we live in a dangerous time, and I'd like to ask, you know, what rights does he think students and staff are giving up? The staff of a public school is supposed to is responsible for the movements and safety of the students there. I think having a system that they can refer to, and the police and fire department, as you just heard, can refer to, would help us as a community save lives of small children. This is a school is not a home. It's a public place, and we need to make sure that we understand what happens there. I urge passage of this article and Article 21.
Anybody else wish? Okay, so we have a couple more people. Yep, straight in the front, please. Thank you.
Hi, Samuel Haddad from 32 Penny Meadow Road. I just have a quick point I wanted to clarify. The slide said something about this project doesn't include facial recognition. Is there any intention that it might in the future, or is that intended to always be off for indefinitely? I don't know if the software would ever support that.
Ms. Duran?
There's been no discussion about incorporating facial recognition software into our cameras.
Okay, we're going to just kind of work our way backwards if you want to pass the microphone behind you. Thank you.
Sarah Triano, 342 Lincoln Road, and I'm speaking as an individual, not a school committee member. There's been a lot of really good points made about the opinion of public safety. I think it's been reiterated twice now. So I think the public safety rationale for this is very clear. I also think there's a consistency issue. We have these cameras in many buildings in our town already that protect the adults that live here. But I do want to add something to the debate, and I'm led to share this based on, in response to something Mr. Surratt said. He talked about that we need to send a message to our students and teach them that about their rights. I agree that we need to send a message to our students, but that message is that we are here taking care of them, that we are here with their best interests in mind, and I include the staff in that, because whether we like it or not, this is the reality in the world that our children, our youngest children even, are living in. And they live with this fear. They live with this every day. They're not immune to what's happening around them. And they go to school sometimes scared. And it's helpful to be able to reassure them. Of course, we can't guarantee their 100% safety, but I think it behooves us, and the town of Sudbury is a place where we should be able to say to our youngest residents and community members that we as their adults and caretakers are doing everything that we possibly can to make their schools as safe for them as possible. And there's a comprehensive list of measures that our school district takes to do this. And this is one missing element that I think is critical. And as Chief Nick said, we don't need to look further than the most recent school shootings in America to know that the interior cameras are needed. And I, for one, want to be able to tell my children and the rest of the children that we're doing everything we can to take care of them. And that's the message I think that we should be sending today.
Okay, there's a comment, right? Just if you could, Ms. Troy, you want to turn around and give that to Mr. Matthews. Thank you.
Thanks,
and we're just going to keep moving back.
Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. Speaking as a town resident and not as a school committee member, great points have been made about the safety, have been made about the comparableness of the cameras in other buildings. But, you know, I've read George Orwell. If we're going to talk about Big Brother, Big Brother's you, people in the school committee. This is a town. The analogy is really specious. We are Big Brother by your analogy. No, that's not true. If you want to petition the school committee to change the rules about how these cameras are used, go to a school committee meeting and make your case. This is the town. This is not some fictional despot. You know, this is our town. If we think that this is Big Brother, then Big Brother is us.
If you could just kind of pass that off over to your left. I have two more people that I'd like to get to first. Up, and I'm going to go up to the balcony.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road, Sudbury. I think the cameras at LS have been somewhat mischaracterized. I'm a recently retired high school teacher from here, and when the school decided that they wanted to do this, it was a two and a half year conversation. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bella, but the faculty was very much against it, and there was a long discussion, and in the end, the cameras that are interior to this building face outward, covering the doors. The only interior camera is one around along the back corridor here, which allows, which was put in because of vandalism specific to this area. This is a very public space. There are no cameras up on the third floor, up on the fourth floor, however you want to count the floors here. And I know that the faculty here would agree with Mr. Surrett that there was a sense that they didn't want Big Brother watching, and that the faculty was included in the plan. And I haven't heard anyone say that this plan that hasn't, I haven't seen it been made public, that the faculty has been included in those decisions and those conversations. So it concerns me that this plan, while I don't know that I'm for it or against it because I don't know enough about it, has not been properly vetted or improperly distributed and properly thought about. Thank you.
Do one comment in the top balcony, and then we'll move to a vote because I do want to be mindful of the time. We're past 10:30 at this point. Yes, you.
Hi, Ann Bischoff, 62 Moore Road. I am violently opposed to this idea. These are elementary school kids. We are trying to create an environment of learning, of creativity, of a safe place to be yourself. And this just to me is too much. These are little kids, they're developing, creating. I understand they see the news and they hear this. To me, this would make it worse. This creates more fear, more anxiety for our children. I agree with the prior speaker that it needs more information. People need to hear and understand why this is true. This is just fear-mongering, and I just think it's a horrible idea. It's going to create a lot of anxiety with kids who already have enough.
Okay. Last comment in the balcony, please.
Yeah. Cindy Fenichel, 114 Old Lancaster Road. I'll try to be quick. I'm sensitive to the concerns about our kids. My kids have grown up through the school system, and I understand. I've received those phone calls from a child in college, "Mom, we're on lockdown. It's an active shooter." But frankly, these cameras are not going to help. They're going to cause more intimidation. I also want to note that I do work in the juvenile courts, and the cameras are used against the children to intimidate children and their behavior, and I'm really concerned that this is going to be more punitive to the children than protective.
Okay. The quantum of vote for passage is majority for Article 20. Voting is now open.
We'll give that a couple more seconds. Voting is closed on Article 20. It passes by slightly more than majority. It is now 10:47. I want to be mindful of trying to get through tomorrow and finishing up tomorrow, so I'm wondering if anybody would be willing to make a motion to deal with Article 21 tonight because it deals with a similar subject. Okay, so I guess we're moving to adjourn to tomorrow night. We'll take up Article 21. No? Okay. So there's a motion to continue on with Article 21. Is there a second? Okay. That will require a majority vote. All in favor of continuing past 10:30 to deal with just Article 21? Okay. Anybody opposed? Okay. It passes by more than majority. So we'll deal with Article 21, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School Camera System Replacement Select Board for the motion.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $206,652 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Ms. Wong.
Thank you.
You may be pleased to hear there is one slide. Okay. This school was built in 2004 with cameras, and there was an upgrade and replacement last in 2014. There was a slight expansion after that date to add exterior cameras. The article tonight is to upgrade, replace the interior cameras only. We're talking about fewer than 100 cameras for the entire building. The cameras that came into Lincoln Sudbury are all aimed at the way to all egress and exits. So they are focused on how you get into the building. There are also some limited cameras in the common areas around the auditorium because this is the most used common space in the high school. So there are cameras outside the auditorium in these spaces. There are some limited cameras around musical instruments, around the fitness center, around metal arts where the jewelry is made. So the cameras have been intentionally placed for personal safety and also for security of property. In this next update, there'll be a minor expansion to cover more common spaces so that you can see the stairwells. So if someone were to enter in the building and we had a critical emergency, we would be able to track perhaps someone entering the building, and we would be able to track their movement on different floors. Still a fairly intentional placement of cameras. I would say that the cameras are a critical element of safety and security for us. I think all of us know that safety and security in schools and other public spaces has been an evolving challenge for us. There are things that we do differently now than we did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But the cameras have continued to be a critical element for us. And so the money, the price is up there. So there's the Sudbury portion and the Lincoln portion.
Thank you. Select Board for?
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report?
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-1.
CIAC for report?
CIAC recommends approval by a vote of 6-0.
Who wishes to be heard on Article 21? Yes, we're going to start with the gentleman off to the side, please.
Grant Grummer, 15 Pine Street. Can you tell me how long recordings are kept before they're deleted?
Ms. Wong?
The recording length for these cameras are 30 days, and then after 30 days it loops over, and then they're erased.
In the hat, please.
Dan Martin, Brookdale Road. I didn't get the chance to speak on the last motion, but I would like to bring up some statistics from 4 years ago when this last came up. At the time, Article 21 was seeking to let's just cut to the chase here. There were total losses of for damage and theft of $6,846 for 4 years before internal cameras were put in this school, and $6,525. The losses are negligible. The improvement after cameras was brought was negligible. And make no mistake, this is not a one-time cost. As we can see, lifetime of these cameras from the manufacturer is 5 years. Someone who's involved in the AV here at this school has told me that they could probably expect 10. But we will be looking at spending another $200,000, $300,000 in the next decade to replace these cameras yet again for a third time, and also in the elementary schools now.
I think there was somebody in the row behind you. Yes.
Yes, Linda Smith, 15 Hawthorne Drive, speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Sudbury. I just wanted to clarify that we had initially opposed this measure as well as the previous one on the basis that there was no information available about whether facial recognition technology was included. But both Superintendent Wong and Superintendent Crozier have confirmed that it is not included, and so we have dropped our opposition to the measure. Thank you.
Is there anybody in the balcony? No, okay. Other comments? Okay. Mr. Surrett?
Without repeating myself, the school committee wasn't real interested in giving me much information about what they were doing when I sent them a Freedom of Information Act request. What the FOIA response tells us is that the police have unrestricted access to these cameras without any due process, search warrant, court order, or other constraint. Nobody watches these cameras in real time. They're set up to record. The recordings are used to prosecute or discipline. They are not public safety tools. Now, Ben Franklin taught us that those who would surrender a little freedom for a little security deserve neither. I suggest we be mindful of Mr. Franklin's wisdom.
Ms. Green in the front here, please. Thank you.
Good evening, and thankfully, and hopefully not good morning. Dave Cartoonan, 74 Surrey Lane. I just had separate questions for maybe Chief Nix and Ms. Wong about some of the comments that were just made. First, from a school committee perspective, I presume that these budgetary items were presented in open meetings that anyone could have attended and learned more about. And Chief Nix, with one of the earlier suggestions about how these cameras could be deployed after the fact once we learned that there was an intruder in town, inside of a building, could you sort of lay out for us what use a camera system would be if we had to turn it on after an intruder entered the building?
Chief Nix?
Yes. Good evening once again. So we only have live access, right, that they would activate the ability for us to live view to best direct our resources. And I know there was some statements made about money with losses, and I want to bring you back to a little bit of a personal thing. January 17th of 2007, I did my first ever safety training in this room. Dr. Ritchie introduced me, saying schools are one of the safest places in America, probably don't need to be doing this training, but Lieutenant Nix, which I was at the time, says we should. So I was like, hey, thank you for that positive introduction, right? Following day, there was a bullet found in a bus. Could have been a Curtis bus, could have been an LS bus. Dr. Ritchie and I might have butted heads a little bit. The following morning, I was at Curtis waiting to search the kids for that arena and being fair and equitable to everybody. When one of my detectives came in and said, hey, LT, we are stabbing at the high school. So we responded up here. We had five officers here, to include myself, within 5 to 6 minutes. All right. I made the death notification to both parents individually via phone, something I still remember to this day. Right. So I never put a price on one's life, and I never wanted to have to make a notification as such. If we can be better, if we can respond quicker. You know, there's a lot of what ifs, and I understand that, but I want to make sure that we are doing the best for your kids, for your grandkids, for the staff members as we can. Thank you.
Ms. Wong, did you want to answer that other question?
Yes, this is part of the capital budget process, so everything has been presented to the capital committees in both towns, the finance committees, and to our select board, and of course our school committee. It's the police department actually has access when we flip the access, so they do not have unfettered access. It would only be flipped when there was a critical event happening at the school. Thank you.
Okay, we'll do one last comment back here on the to my left.
Henry Noor again. I would like to suggest that those who suggest that this system will cause trauma in children are off base. An incident in Sudbury, like those that have occurred in schools all across the United States, would cause a lot more trauma than having surveillance cameras in public spaces.
Okay, we'll move to vote on Article 21. Quantum of vote required for passage is majority. The voting is now open. Couple more seconds. Voting is now closed on Article 21, which passes by more than majority. It is almost 11 o'clock. At this point, I would take a motion to adjourn to Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023, in this auditorium. Thank you. Is there a second? All in favor, please raise your cards. Any opposed? That passes by well more than majority. We will see you tomorrow night at 7:30.